Okay. The area I'm going to discuss is the area of Taramada, which is an area that's very negeba zman hazeh, more than it ever was until rather recently in our history. It's an area, I just want to start off by mentioning that there are certain things which come under the class of davar asa, davar amata, which means to say certain things question whether something's mutter, whether it's awesome. And when it comes to question of davar asa, davar mutter, so there are ways to go about it. I mean, there's such a thing even as a shopping for a heter. There's such a thing as a person requiring under a certain situation a heter, and there are various deis among the Puskim, and under certain situations a Baal Hara can determine that a heter is in place and that one can make use of a heter among the Puskim. But I want to distinguish between something which is of the nature of a Maisa Issa, question of a Maisa Issa or a Maisa Heta, and once and something has to do with the Yesodei Ados. Yesodei Ados, you understand, has to be treated differently. Yesodei Ados are in a separate category, because in Yesodei Ados we are dealing with the most chomer area of Yadus, which means there's a question of a person's simply stated a question of a person's Olam Haba. And the question of Mada, the question of Mada, of studying Chachmos Chitonios, which means Chachmos outside the realm of Torah, is really a question that deals with the Yesodei Ados. It's not just a question of something which is Mutter or Asar, you see. It has to be approached in the framework, in a different framework altogether, because it belongs to the area of Yesodei Ados, and anyone that goes wrong with regard to the area of Yesodei Ados, yeah, that's why the Rambam has a special area of Hilchas Yesodei Torah. Anyone that deviates, the Rambam mentions in the Mar Nevuchim, if a person should make a mistake with regard to something unimportant, relatively unimportant, it's true he's deviated from the truth. But that can't be compared to an error that a person will make with regard to the fundamentals, the most basic principles of Yadus, which ensure us a chelek in the Olam Haba. So over here, when you're dealing with an area of that nature, you're dealing with something that is in a completely different realm and has to be treated totally in a different manner. Now, the question of learning, studying Chachmas Chitonios, which means any Chachmas that are outside the realm of Torah, is a question that has to do, most definitely, not a question of is it Mutter or is it Asur, but it's a question that has to do with the Yesodei Ados, the fundamental principles of Yadus. And I think that as such, certainly we should do as we usually do, make use of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch discusses it. We have a guide in Yadus. We have a guide of the Shulchan Aruch. And we have to make use of the Shulchan Aruch with regard to this psak, just like with regard to other psak. Now, the Ramah does discuss the problem, the question, in Hilchas Talmud Torah. And the Ramah says as follows. The Ramah talks about how a person should organize his day in terms of Talmud Torah, and that's Talmud Torah is Talmud Torah Kenegad Kulam. It's in Reish Mem Vav. It's in Reish Mem Vav Dalet. Okay? Now the Ramah says like this. The Ramah says that first he talks about with the chiyuv to study every day Chumash and Mishnayos and Tanakh, and he brings down the Shittas Rabbeinu Tam that with our Gemara he eats everything because it includes all. And it's like it says, "V'ain lo adam lumod ki in mikra mishne gemara vaposkim. Hamshachem achareim. A person should only study the Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebaalpeh and the Gemara and the Poskim, which follow and which explain the Torah Shebaalpeh and Torah Shebiksav. He says, "Ubozeh yikneh olam hazeh v'olam haba." And through this, the person is kona both this world and the next world. Avalo b'limit shir chachmos. A person should not study the other chachmos. Umikol makom, he says, "Mutter lilmod ba'akroy." A person can study in a manner which is not considered that he is setting aside specific time for limud with regard to the bishari chachmos. He said, as long as it's not considered, as long as it's not sfarim that are kfira, apikursus. This is called among the chachomim teal bapardis, like the Rambam explains. Now the Shach brings down that teal bapardis, he says, what does it mean? Limut shir chachmos. Kigoni says, sifrei achilosufim. The philosophers studies of philosophy, utachuna, and the mathematical subjects, the chokhmas kabbalah, also kabbalah's aser, the kayetze ben, and he explains it's an interesting shach, where it brings down the he goes later he says that there were xeris path that a person shouldn't study kabbalah till he's 40 years old, and people who do study this area. Before they're ready, it leads to a great catastrophe. So you see, we're dealing here when the Ramah says that we're dealing with an area of great importance. Now, of course, in our times, this became a serious problem because of the social pressure among society for people to be educated. And years ago, it wasn't such a big pressure socially, but today the society is educationally oriented and becomes a big problem, specifically with regard to going to college. And we have to remember, however, that as much as the pressure is great, what we have to do is we have to come to a decision based on the our usual method of studying the Torah and studying Halacha. And even though it may mean doing something which is against our desires, we still have to abide by the system of Yadas. I mean, there's no place over here for a heter. It's a question because you're dealing with Chayal Mabah. So this question of Chachmas Chitzonius, we can't take into consideration the social pressure, but rather we must take into consideration the pressure that we should be under to be Kona Chayal Mabah, which is foremost in our minds. Now, there are, of course, many poskim that deal with it. You have, for instance, a tshuva from Rav Moshe. I was stretching a little bit. Rav Moshe has two tshuvas on it. It's in Yeridei Chelek Gimel. One is Siman Pei Aleph. Rav Moshe says like this. He says that with regard to establishing the yeshivas, in which there are secular studies as well. So he says like this. He says where a person is coerced because of chinuch. He says where it's impossible for whatever reason it might be, whether it's because of the parents or whether it's because of the talmidim, that unless they study limudei chol under the Ashgach, under the supervision of Yiri Hashem Yisbarach and Rosh HaYeshiva for a small time, he says, then if you won't allow them to do that, so then they'll go to the public schools. He says that this, which then of course it'll be a complete deviation from God and from our holy Torah. And he says, and if you permit them to study secular studies under the supervision of Rosh Yeshiva for a small time after they learn for many hours in the day Torah, so he says, then they'll be able to become B'nai Torah and Yerei Hashem Yisbarach. He says, and there are some places where there is no need for that. Like, for instance, a certain place, Eretz Yisrael. He says, in such a case, it's definitely usher to establish such a yeshiva, which has in it Limud Echol, okay, secular studies. He says, and even if there's a need for certain Talmidim, a few Talmidim, he says, you should not establish such a yeshiva. And therefore, he says, it's very difficult for me from the distance to paskin this shaila, because I have to know what the situation is. And he says, the only one that could paskin this is a Mori da Asra, which is involved in the situation. Okay. Now, the next shaila, which is Simon Pei Beis, so he talks about about going to college. He says, the B'nai Yeshiva, which Asherim, who are able, with Gadol Shem B'Torah B'Yiras Hashem, who are capable of becoming great in Torah and in Yiras Shemayim, he says, even to study secular studies, even if the studies do not involve Kfirah, and also they are not done in a situation of men and women together, he says it's an isser. Why? Because Yemeniya Chai Olam, which is an isser, even after a person becomes a Gadol B'Torah, even if the person becomes a Gadol B'Torah. And he cites the case of the Gemara in Tainus. It's an interesting Gemara. Ever more Tainus? Some people want to argue that the perfection of man comes about not just through Talmud Torah, but the perfection of man comes about through other studies. And that's really the sheet of Torah Mada, the way it's literally proposed. A Torah Mada means that there's perfection of Torah, and Mada means that there is an auxiliary type of perfection. So he says very simply that this cannot be, because if there was such a thing, then certainly this would have been given at Sinai and would have been part of a Masorah. It would have been part of a Masorah. So since it wasn't given at Sinai, so you cannot possibly say that this type of limud is a limud of perfection. And he goes on to say that he says he quotes the Gemara. The Gemara says that he says, "V'omaroch lo tomar." A person shouldn't say, "Lamadati chachmas Yisrael, elech velmad chachmas umos olam." I'll study the other chachmas. He says, "Talmud lomar lo leches b'hem, v'lo li potamim." It's Chazal. Beer advarn k'mar she'amati. The kol ishu shmei Yisrael achiv alaf kolayin yachol alav limatara. The only time he's put from Talmud Torah is where a mitzvah verse comes to his hand. Okay. And therefore, Baruch Be'er says, definitely it's an issa, not just an issa, but it's a danger insofar as the potential loss of Chai Yolam Abba, and he asks it. And as I mentioned, Ramah definitely says that a person, it's also for a person, to Ramah Reish Mem Vav Dalet, that it's also for a person to involve himself with anything but Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara, Poskan, Meshach, and Mahareyim. And through this will become a Chai Olam Hazeh and Chai Olam Abba. And Avalo B'Limit Shara Chachmas. Ramah says, not through the study of other Chachmas. And the Gro and the Shach and all the Poskan. B'Kitzer, the question of studying Shara Chachmas is not a new question, it's an old question. We don't have new questions, certainly not any new questions that have to do with Yisari Adas. I mean, Yisari Adas have worked out fairly well. And we have a Shulchan Aruch, and it seems pretty clear that a person, if he steps out to Sfar, to learning Limud Echol, Sfar Machitzonim, he is playing with his Chayei Olam Haba. So as I said before, it's not merely a question of a heter, finding a heter for a maisa. It's more serious than that. It's dealing with the Yisori Hadas, with the Etzem Yisori Hadas. And the Paskim have already dealt with it, and Gedolei Yisrael have dealt with it. Rav Moshe Zecher Tzadok Livracha, as I mentioned in his Tshuvas, in Pei Aleph Pei Beis, Chelek Gimel of Yeridea, and the Yisr of establishing a school, if you don't have to establish a school that has Limud Echol, is awesome. Absolutely awesome. The only time he has a heter is because otherwise the children will go to public schools. It's a different kind of heter. It's Eis Lasos Hashem Eferet Arasach. But that's because it's possible with Limud Echol under the supervision of people who are Talmidei Chachamim, it's possible that they should emerge Talmidei Chachamim. But certainly a person who doesn't have to do that, it would be usher, absolutely usher to establish such an issue. And you know, Reb Chaim closed down Volozhin because the government wanted to introduce a small amount of Limud Echol, very nothing, but they closed down the yeshiva because of that. So you see, it's not just, you have Gedolei Yisrael, talking about Reb Chaim Brisker, you're talking about the Reb Baruch Ber, you're talking about Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Aaron Cutler. I remember years ago, gave many, many shiurim on it. And he spoke about the issur of going to college was a tremendous, tremendous thing. Tremendous, it was actually, I mean, as I said, it has to do with the Yisori Hadas. And I realize there's tremendous pressure in this area, but we have to understand that we can't. I mean, it is not the proper way to weigh a problem because of the pressure of the situation when it's dealing with Yisodei Hadas and when it's dealing with Chayei Olam Haba. It just doesn't make any sense in terms of the system of Yadas. So if a person feels the pressure because of that, because he's going to buck society, so to speak, then he's not operating according to the Derech HaTorah. We bucked society many times in the past, from the time of Matan Torah until today. There are many, many different problems that arose, questions of even Sakanas Nefashis, and Klal Yisrael only has one way to deal with it, and that is that there is no compromise whatsoever when it comes to Yisori Hadas, no matter what it is. And that's why I feel, just to give you like an introduction to the Inyan, I think it's important that we should perceive what exactly we are dealing with. But it is no doubt a question of Yisori Hadas, and we have to try to understand the Chazal over here and understand the Paskin, what they're saying. And then there's a secondary question, the question of a person in the yeshiva, even if it should be mutter, like the second shuva of Moshe, the question of what a person should do with his time, the tremendous achrayas a person has to become a Talmud Chacham, especially b'zman hazeh, to become a London, and that's a secondary issue. But the primary issue we should deal with is the very question itself, plain and simple. Is it mutter to study Limud Echol, anything outside of the realm of Torah? Okay. Yeah.
All the Gedolim supposed to be
there? It is impossible to say that these Gedolei Yisrael that I mentioned, that their psak comes from the lack of knowledge. That's impossible. Because, you know, the Rav one time mentioned that the Rambam says that who's considered a kofer, so Rambam has in Hilchas Tshuva. So Rambam mentions that a person in Chelek Gimel in Perek Gimel, the Rambam says like this. The Rambam says Shloshein on the Quran Apikorsu. Three people are considered Apikorsu, and he says that in Shloshein a kofer from a Torah. The Rambam has it categorized. Who's not Apikorsu is a kofer from a Torah. There are different terminologies. Rambam says like this. Person says the Torah is not from God. Afilu pasuk echad, afilu tevachas. Even one pasuk, even one word. Im Omar, Moshe Omrum mipi atzma, or is a kof b'tar. If he should say that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it on his own. He was a leader, and he wrote a book. So a person that says that even one word that Moshe Rabbeinu put in one word of his own is a kofer b'tar. V'chein ha-kofer b'pirusha, anyone who denies, same thing, a person who denies the Torah shebal peh, he says, v'ha-makhish magideh. So the Ram says, makhish magideh means, what does the Ram says, makhish magideh? Makhish magideh is a strange thing, why does the Ram put this in? Makhish magideh. Makhish magideh means that he denigrates, he speaks derogatorily of those who are the Magidei HaTorah. Okay? Who are the Magidei HaTorah? Magidei HaTorah are the people who have carried down the Shalshelas HaTorah, the Mesoras HaTorah, the Mesorah, are very Mesorah. So in Bala HaMesorah, it's absolutely clear to say that the Bala HaMesorah is defective with regard to his psak, with regard to his knowledge, because it's an impossibility. Insofar as he is a Bal HaMasara, it's impossible that he should be defective in knowledge, because a Bal HaMasara is the one who the Torah has been given over to, from Bezdina Shel Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua Ben Nun to the Skatim, straight down the line to Beishama Beisil, all the way through Ravina Ravashi, and after Ravina Ravashi, Rabbanus Feroi, and the Gainim and the Rishainim and the Achrainim into our very day, because there's Avtocha that God gave us, Le'amushu Divrei Torah Zonei Picha, and it means that there will always be Balei HaMasara, and these Balei HaMasara are the ones, Lo Sosman Levishin Yidcha Yomin HaSmal, it's Avtocha. That's how we know this, that the Balei HaMasara are the people who are in charge of Torah. God will not allow the Torah to be in the hands of someone who is incapable, and therefore it's impossible to say that the Balei HaMasara are defective and that they lack knowledge. As a matter of fact, the Ramah studied philosophy. So the Ramah himself studied philosophy, and the Marshal studied Kabbalah, and there was a whole big argument. They used to argue, their tshuvas written, they used to argue with each other which is more profitable, but whatever. But the point is, the Ramah's psak, one cannot say that the Ramah's psak is based on a defect. It's attacking a Bal HaMasara. Or Reb Chaim Brisker's psak is based on a defect in his knowledge. It is not true. Absolutely false. Cannot say such a thing. Shach, he cannot say that. We're talking about the Balei Horah, the Balei HaMasara. The whole Shalshelas HaTorah comes from these people, from these individuals. And to say that they're defective, they made up, they paskin, the Groh. There's a Groh in this. There's a Groh now. They're saying there's a Groh that supports the Ramah. Right in Reish Mem Vav. You're talking about Balei HaMasara here. You're not talking about a person who is one of a, who is a, happens to be a Talmud Chacham and is not in the mainstream of the Balei HaRoi. You're talking about the mainstream of the Balei HaRoi. It is impossible to say that they didn't know or they didn't have any knowledge or they were defective, because to say that would be Machish Magidel. And that's a Kofa B'Torah. So you can't say such a thing.
The Rambam
certainly wanted the Balei HaMasara. There's no question about it. The Rambam, I mean, there's no question about it. And the Rambam himself, I'll show you. The Rambam himself, we will take the Rambam. As a matter of fact, what I'd like to do is I'd like to explain the area, and I'm going to use the Rambam to understand the area, okay? But I'm just saying that the Gedolei Hador, Gedolei Yisrael, straight through have dealt with the issue, and there's no question about it that the you see that they were dead against it. Okay, dead set against it. Yes. Yeah, even because of business. But we'll take the Gemara and Tainus also. But what I'd like to, the Gemara and Tainus are mostly used to support the secondary issue. The question of a person who's learning in a yeshiva, what should he do with his time? Is he allowed to go to college? That's the question. Okay? Alright, it's a big question. It's not, I just want to show you it's a very serious issue. You can't make light of it. You can't just say, well, everybody goes, I have to go, and that's it. My parents told me to go, I must go. Society's pressuring me, I have to go. There's no such thing. You can't get away with such a thing. You're dealing with Yisori Ados. Alright. Okay, the Rambam, after he gets finished with the Sefer Torah, so the Rambam, he has these different things on astronomy and mathematics, a lot of astronomy, And the Rambam says, after it gets finished, V'nyone abo prokim elu shebechomesh mitzvah sa'elu heim shecham marishonim karnas on Pardes. So that's considered Pardes. And the Rambam is discussing a lot of astronomy over here. A lot of the astronomy, size of the moon, size of the earth, all these different things. He says all this is considered by the Chachamim Teal Bapardis. Okay? Now he says, Vav Pishik Dol Yisro, he says, Kamosha Abba Nichnasul Bapardis. Vav Pishik Dol Yisro, Lo Yivacham Gidolim Hoyu, Lo Kulam Hoyo Ben Koach, Leida Lahasikola Dvar Maburyan. Even though these were great Chachamim, they weren't all capable of understanding these phenomena properly. Vani Omer, Shane Roy Latal Bapardis, Elimishin Ismali Kreis, Elachim Abbasa. Person can't walk in the garden until he has a full meal. The lachem abasa who laid the osav amuta v'kiyotz ben mishar mitzvahs. So first, the person must know who osav amuta. V'af pishad dvarim el dover cotton. Even though they call this dover cotton, shirachem dover gadol ma'isim akava dover cotton havayis abayef rav, which means the Gemara. Afa pikein ruin hein like dimon. These must come first. So it's clear in the Rambam what must come first before a person goes into the areas that he discusses in the past prakim. Which has to do with mathematics and astronomy and Maisa Merkava, all these things. He says a person must first have a clear-cut knowledge of Dover Asma Mutter. Shein Miyashvin Daitei Shalom Tchila. Gives two reasons. First of all, it's Miyashev Daitei. What exactly Miyashev Daitei means is not clear, but he says it does something to his mind which is necessary as a prerequisite. V'od, and the second reason is Shein Matov HaGdolo Sheshpia Kadosh Baruch Hu Liyishev HaOlam Hazeh Kedei Linchol L'chayelam Abah. That the reason why God gave the Torah is in order that we can have a good life on this world, and through that we should be able to live properly so that we will inherit the Chayel HaMavah. Vef sheyeda kol, sheyedam hakol, katan v'gadol, ish v'isha, baal lev rachav v'baal lev katzah. Everyone is capable in that area. So it seems clear for the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't make any exceptions. Rambam says that the first thing is that a person has to study is Dov Rasa Amuta, which means basically Shas. Okay. Now,
just a second.
Yeah. What? That's one side of the picture. Okay. So the argument against Limudei Chol is pretty strong and well grounded. Okay. What I'd like to do is I would like to just take up on it a little more. I think there's more to it than meets the eye at first. I'll tell you what I think. If you take a look at the Ramah, so the Ramah says it's us to learn Limud Chol. Clear. Okay? And, yeah. And he says, and as a matter of fact, with the Ramah says, Avalo B'limud Shor HaChachmos, so the Gros says, he says, Hu Medivrei Rambam U'Mefarash Shezeu Dalet Shenichnasu L'Pardes. That's Rabbi Akiva. Because they were all very young, except for Rabbi Akiva was older. That's why the Gra says, because that's why Rabbi Akiva was able to be successful and they weren't. But you see, the Gra, as you know, did study Shor HaChachmos. And the Gra supports the Ramah's Psak. So, since that's the case, it leaves something to be explained. It's like, it's strange, you see. Not only is that strange, but the Ramah himself actually is strange, because the Ramah says Mikomakom Mutter Lumod Ba'akroi Bishor Chochmos Ubilvat Shelo Yusuf Reminim. So Ramah himself says, but it's mutter to learn haphazardly, in other words, not in a as a set kvius, but just off and on, occasionally a person can browse through the Shor Chochmos. Now the question is, of course, what kind of a thing is that? We have to understand that. Mamonoshech. If it's usher to learn Shor HaChachmos, it should be always usher. Why is it mutter b'akroi? And not only is it mutter b'akroi, but he says this is called teal b'pardes. Teal b'pardes is something which is very praiseworthy. It's not just something which is optional, but on the contrary, as the Gros says, this is the Rambam. And the Rambam says the highest level of man is achieved through teal b'pardes. It's the highest level that a person can reach. So it seems like we're caught here in between. On the one hand, you're not supposed to learn the limud chol. On the other hand, it seems that these limudim are responsible for a person reaching the highest level. That seemed like a contradiction. Okay? And the Chazal, there are different Chazal also that seem to be problematic. For instance, the Gemara Menachos that says that somebody asked the Chachamim, a person like me that's a Ma'alum or Chachmas Yavanis. So he says, so he told them, say, if, go find the time of the day that's neither day or night. Rashi says it's impossible, because there's a Gizbayan Valarva, so you can't do it. But there are other Gemaras that seem to indicate the opposite. Why? Because the Gemara in Shabbos says, the Gemara in Shabbos, that says that Kol Hayadei Lachashev Tekufos Mazolas Veinachashev, a person that is able to study astronomy, means to understand physics, understand astronomy, so, and he doesn't do it. So all of our Kosovam, the Pasuk says about him, is Paul Yodai Lo Ro'u, or Maisa Yodai Lo Ibitu. So the Pasuk says that God says about such a person that he failed to look at the greatness and the splendor of God's works. You see. So that Chazal would seem to indicate, on the contrary, that it's a good thing. Now, how could you study it if you don't? How could you know that if you don't study it? Okay. There's an interesting Rambam. Interesting Rambam in Hilchas Avodas Kachovim. I think if we understand the Rambam, we'll understand the solution to the problem. Okay. The Rambam says like this. Hilchas Avodas Kachovim, Perek Beis. Perek Beis. It's Halacha Beis and Gimel. Okay. The Rambam says like this. Svarim Rabim Chibro Avdei Kachovim Bavodasim. Many books that the Avdei Kachovim wrote about how to worship their Avodah Zarah. Sivono HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shlo Likros Bosna Svarim Klal. We are not permitted to read any of these books. V'lo Nahara Bo V'lo B'dover Midvorea. Not even to think about such things. V'afilu L'stakel B'dmus HaTzura Oser. Even to look at the image of the Tzura is an Isidoraisa. Shinema Al Tifnu Al Alilav. Okay. And the Rambam before says, also in the same area, he says, Binyan Azatziva V'omar, Yishamu Lachem Pen Yifta Levavchem, Kolomash, Lo Titu Behiru Halev Lavod Elu Lios Sirso Beinechem Ubein Abore. Pen Yifta Levavchem means you shouldn't turn towards these things. Same thing, Al Tifnu Al Alilav. Ubinyan Azen Nemar, Pen Tidrosh De Loheyem Lemor Echo Yavdu, Shlo Tishol Al Derech Avodosa Heyechem. All right? So this is with regard to Avodah Zarah. Everybody accepts that. There's no problem. Okay? But they don't have any courses in college about that. V'chol alavin o'elu b'inyin echad hein. V'u shalo yifnei achar avodas kochovim. All right. V'chol anifnei achar reo b'derech shuos v'mais reiz lak. V'lo anadaram goes on. Halach gimel. V'lo avodas kochovim bo vadu shuosu. Lifonos achar reo. Actually, they do have courses in such things, but they're not major courses. Okay, definitely is. All right. Not only Avodas Kachovim is there an issur to turn towards them. B'machshava, ela kol machshava shu gorum lo la'odam lakor ikur me ikri haTorah. Any thought which causes a person to uproot any one of the fundamentals of Torah, muzharin onu shlo lahalosa ali benu. We are not permitted to entertain that thought. He says, "V'lo nasiach daitenu l'kach v'nachshav v'nimshach achahiru hiruri alev." We are not permitted to turn after the inclinations of our heart. "M'neishal daiter shalom kitzara," because a person's mind is very limited. "V'lo kol adayas yicholim hasagam asalbira." Not every mind can understand the truth the way it should be in reality. V'im yimshech kol odam achar machshavos libo, if every person will follow his inclinations, nimta machreves ha'olam l'fi kotza daita, will come and he'll destroy the world according to the smallness of his mind. Keitza, palmen yosar achar avodas kachovim. Sometimes he'll think about maybe avodas kachovim is right. U'palmen yachshov b'yichud habore. See, Ram doesn't mean avodas kachovim. He doesn't mean primitive idolatry. He means anything which is defined halachically, according to the Torah, as avodah zarah, which is a very great class of things. Upam yachshov b'yichud habore. Sometimes he'll think, yes, there's yichud Hashem, God is one. Shemahu shem eino. Maybe it is so, maybe not. Mala 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 Mata Mala Funam Mala Ochar. It means what is beyond the beyond. What could there be something beyond the universe? What was before the universe? What is after the universe? Upamim b'nevuah. Sometimes a person will think about nevuah. Shemei emes, shemei ena. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. Upam b'torah. Shemei min hashamayim, shemei ena. Maybe Torah is min hashamayim. It's not min hashamayim. Vein yadei hamidos sheyodin bohen at sheyida emes al burio v'nimtzu yotzei l'dei minos. So the person doesn't have any knowledge. He isn't capable of really ascertaining true knowledge in that area. So it'll come out, it'll become an apikaris. Val in ze zira tor v'nema bavlo surach rei levavchem v'achrei enechem asher atem zonim. Kloma lo yimoshech kol echad mikem achadaita v'akitzora. V'yidme shem achshavto maseges ha'emes. A person shouldn't turn after his limited mind, his limited intelligence, and imagine that his understanding is ascertaining the truth. Kach omru chacholim, achrei levavchem zuminus, v'achrei enechem zuznus. V'lav ze'af pishu gorem lo'odom letirdo min ha'olam abo, ein bo malkus. Even this love removes a person from olam abo, there's no malkus because no maisa. Okay. Now, the question is like this. The question is, yeah, he goes on later in Halacha Hay also. He says, Apikursim heimator macha machshavos libam, the sichlus dvaram. An apikurs, the person that follows his own heart, his own imaginations, until he violates the Torah b'yad Roma. Okay. Now, he says, not even allowed to answer a person. Alright, interesting thing. He says, Vosel Sapim Mom Hoshavalan Chuva, you're not allowed to talk to them, you're not allowed to answer them. Shinemar Valtikra la Pesach Besa. Umachshova shalapikuris la vodas kachovim. Interesting statement, he says. He says the machshova of an apikuris is for avodas kachovim. Well, one thing after the other doesn't seem. People think an atheist is one thing, an idolater is something else. But the Rambam says it's all one. All the same. Okay. Now the question is like this. The question is in the Rambam himself. I mean, the Rambam himself maintains, of course, that the Maran Avochim. In writing the Maran Avochim, the Rambam's trying to demonstrate the truth of Yadus, the veracity of Yadus. Now, if a person is going to be, and the Rambam maintains in the Maran Avochim that the highest level that a person can reach is when a person investigates, is able to investigate an area properly. Now, how is it possible to investigate an area properly without giving equal weight to both positions? In other words, the Rambam says here, for instance, a person will think, "Pomim b'Torah, shemei min hashamayim, shemayina." Maybe Torah is min hashamayim, maybe not. Okay. Now, isn't this, aren't we supposed to know whether Torah is min hashamayim or not? Now, how could a person investigate whether Torah is min hashamayim or not? How could a person investigate Yichud HaBoreh? The Rambam does a lot of investigations in Yichud HaBoreh. Now, the Rambam in the Mor, as a matter of fact, he criticizes the other philosophers, Christian philosophers and the Arabian philosophers, because he says that they're not investigators. He says what they do is they simply have a foregone conclusion, and all they try to do is to take reality and bend it to their given conclusion. And he says, and that's why their philosophy is nonsense. Is the only way a person can arrive at the truth is if a person makes an honest investigation. My question is, how could a person make an honest investigation? It's an issa d'oraisa. A person is not allowed to think any thought which is contrary to the yisod hadas. So how could the Rambam possibly do such a thing? It would seem that it's an open contradiction, an inherent contradiction. So I think that the answer to this contradiction, I think, will open up the area and explain really what the whole Isser is and the nature of the Isser. Then, of course, you get into a question of Psak, which is a very difficult area. But I'm not going to go into Psak. What I want to go into is just the fundamental concepts that are involved in this area, which I think are, as I said, basic and involve Yisod HaDas. You see, there is one premise here, without which you can't understand the Rambam. And the Rambam mentions it here. See, the premise is like this. The premise is, and the Rambam does mention in the Mora. The Rambam mentions in the Mora that before a person can investigate, he has a special chapter on philosophy. Those are this, on the study of metaphysics. Before a person is capable of investigating, a person must be on a certain level. The Yisr is velosasuru acharei levavchem. What does it mean, acharei levavchem? Acharei levavchem means, over here the lev means the emotions, the emotional inclinations. And what the Rambam means is, what the lav midaraisa is as follows. The lav midaraisa is for a person to investigate these areas when he has a certain emotional inclination. It means to say before he's perfected, because everybody has emotional inclinations. But the Isser is v'lo sasurach v'levavchem zuminus. And al tifnu el ha'alilim, as a matter of fact, they even usher literature. Even literature. If you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch with regard to Shabbos, as mentioned. Al tifnu el ha'alilim, even literature. Why? Because literature is basically, this isn't too big on literature. Because the arts. Why? Because basically literature is novels, is the projection of an individual's emotions. And a person who is involved in that is involved in following the nonsensities of his emotions and makes decisions, what's right and what's not right, based on his emotions. This is connected to the whole of Yadus. What the Rambam says clearly is that a person, it is an Isser for a person. He's not talking about a philosopher. He's not talking about a person who is a great chacham. He's not talking about a person who is an honest investigator. See, the truth of the matter is that Yadus has a very funny position. Why? Because those who know Yadus, the Gedolei Yisrael, the Balei HaMasorah, know that Yadus is true. It is not a matter of belief. They know clearly. They have the evidence. They have the knowledge. And they are convinced about Yadus with the same part of their minds. I'm not going to get into an argument as to what is logical and what is not logical, because that is, it is difficult to get out of such an argument. You have to come up with many definitions. But I could do it very simply, avoiding the issue but yet giving a definition. I would say the following, that they are convinced about Yadus. The conviction of Yadus stems from the same part of their mind that studies a piece of Gemara and that studies a Tesis. The same part of the mind with which a person studies any science. Because, as you know, I mean, all the psukim, Hashemayim Misakim Kavod Kael, and the Chochmas Abore, Su Morim Enechem Uru'umi Bora Ela, all the Neviim and the basis of the Torah. As a matter of fact, the only system in the world at the time, and for many, many generations before the whole development of modern science, the only nation in the world that looked at the heavens and said only one thing about the heavens, nothing mystical, but simply that the heavens reflect Chochmas HaBorei, and that is the only feeling we should have towards the phenomena of the cosmos is Yadus. The pasuk is a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk in the Torah says, "Pentisoi necha shemaimov reiso esekochovin." I don't know exactly the lashon. And the pasuk says, "And you'll start to worship them." And then the pasuk says, "Shecholak adayshem olaykecha osam v'chol goyim ashatachas kol hashemayim." The language is not correct, but the phrase is right. In other words, what is the Torah saying? The Torah is saying there that a person is in great danger, because if he looks up at the heavens, he gets filled with certain emotions, and he can start following very strange paths, and he'll wind up with Avodah Zarah. Why? Because Avodah Zarah basically is the expression of the emotions. But the Torah says clearly, what is the only view towards the heavens? Asher cholak Hashem lekecha olsham v'chol ha'mamlocha shetachas kol ha'shamayim. Means God created these things for the benefit of mankind. That's it. So the only ones that in truth had the scientific attitude towards the heavens, predating any type of modern science, is Yadis. And the Nevi'im the same thing, and the Dabar HaMalach and Tehillim the same exact thing. Shemayim Esavim Kol Kelo Masi Yadav Magad Rekia, all Chochmas Hashem. And the bracha that the Anshei Knesset Gdola, the Yotzer Or in the morning, and the Mar of Arabim B'Chochmas Paseach Sharm of Esfun Mashana Itim Machlath Zmanim Masadis Kachovim Mishmer Aseim Berkir Kitzono Borayim V'Loy Lagolim Nechosha Chachoshim Neor. All the, every piece of overt of literature that we have from the Torah and from the Chachmei Ha'emes points to only one thing, that the heavens are simply reflect God's Chachmei. That is the proper attitude, and we're the only ones that had that attitude, predating and by many centuries of scientific era, even before the Greeks. So that this was a Yesod which was given at Sinai. Without Sinai, we would never be able to have it, because no other nation was able to come to it on their own. So this is a yisod ados. Now, the point I'm making is that with regard to investigation, with regard to investigating Chochmas Hashem, a person is in great jeopardy, because a person is prone to certain types of views because of his emotional makeup. And this, for a person to follow what the Rambam calls in the Mora is imagination. For the Rambam to delve into Yichud Hashem is fine, because the Rambam is on a level where his investigation is not based, does not have any emotional basis. And we know that a person, this I want you to understand, is the Yesod Bados, that any individual who investigates with his intellect, who is on a level, first of all, of human investigation, and who investigates with his intellect, will come to the conclusions, the same conclusions, which are basically the philosophy of Yadus. You see, let me just explain something more first, then you'll understand exactly what I mean. So you have to understand that this Torah that we have is Minas Shamayim. When we say the Torah is Minas Shamayim, we mean that it reflects God's thought. Now, insofar as man is capable of understanding God's thought. But, you see, it's not just something which is limited to, it's not just something which is limited to the studying, for instance, an Abaye and the Gemara. It's not just that. And the proof is, that's exactly what the Rambam says, because the Rambam says that what must precede an investigation into Dovar Gadol, he says you have to study Dovar Asa Dovar Mutter. He says, Shehin miyashvin daitesh lorem tchila. What does it mean, miyashvin daitesh lorem tchila? It means to say it perfects him. It gives him a way of thinking. Now you have to understand that there is in Torah, not overtly, but there is in Torah a hidden epistemology. See, I would say that today the greatest danger of Kfira stems not from atheism, but from epistemology. Epistemology is the area of the greatest danger. Because epistemology, you don't know whether a person should be, you have an empiricist, should he be an empiricist, should he follow the philosophy of mentalism, should he follow the philosophy which is basically just the opposite, which is a physical type of realism, you see. And this is something which is in a big debate. Epistemology is an open area, even today. The greatest danger stems from that study. There are epistemologists that conclude that we simply don't know whether we exist or not. There are people that are known as solipsists, which means they're the only ones that exist. Nobody else exists. It's an area in which a person can enter, you see, and never emerge soundly. But Yadus tells us that the reason why he doesn't emerge soundly is there's only one reason. The reason is because he does not follow his Tzelem Elokim. He doesn't follow his Tzelem Elokim. If a person would follow his Tzelem Elokim, there would be no question that his investigation would result in conclusions that would be in line with the philosophy of Yadus. A person that studies, that is a London, that studies Torah, doesn't just gain knowledge insofar as a particular Dover Osir or Dover Mutter. He gains knowledge in terms of a whole epistemology, a whole way of thinking. And God's thoughts are not different in one area from the other. Which means to say, and I think it's one of the Yesodas of Yadus, that eventually, in the time of the Amos HaMashiach, when it says, Kimola Kol Aretz Deyos Ad Hashem, that man will be able to discover in Torah and from Torah an epistemology which will reflect not just knowledge of Torah, but which will open up all areas of science and will give a certain approach, you see, which is the approach of Yadus. I think that's what the Chazal mean when they say Estako Baraisa Bara Alma. Estako Baraisa Bara Alma means that, of course, it could be learned many ways, but it's, why does it say Estako Baraisa Bara Alma? Baraisa Bara Alma means that it's the same thought, the same type of ideational content, the same epistemology that is found in Torah has to be found in the universe, because it's all Chochmas Hashem, and Achdus Hashem demands such a conclusion. You see, the only thing is that in Torah itself, it's easier. It's much easier to understand the ideas of Torah correctly, because you're structured in a certain way, in a certain study. He's structured by the boundaries of a certain study. But when a person goes out and he leaves the Dalat Amos Shel Halacha, then he's in great danger. Unless, of course, he's an individual who has been able to, from Torah itself, been able to learn and to a certain way of thinking with which he can view the entire universe. You see. Now, at the bottom, everything depends upon epistemology, because epistemology is the basis of knowledge. And the Yesod Hados is that if a person doesn't have this accurately, and the reason why a person does not have it accurately is very much because of his own emotional makeup and his own emotional imperfections. You see? I'll give you an example. Like, there's a certain epistemology today which is very rampant on the college campus, which is that basically we can't know anything. There's nothing. There's something that people, many people, even professors, are very prone to embrace. We have no absolutes. We have no knowledge. We don't know anything. You see? We don't even know whether we exist. Such an epistemology, as you understand, is clearer. It has to be clearer. It's impossible otherwise. Because if you don't know anything, so you don't know, even if you saw Maimon Har Sinai, you wouldn't even accept it. You see? But such an idea, what people don't realize is that such an idea is attractive emotionally. But they don't have enough knowledge of their emotions to be able to see where and why it's attractive. And because they lack this knowledge, you see, they are trapped and they're attracted and glued to this thought and to this philosophy. If they would be able for a moment to remove themselves and to use the Tzelem Elokim, they would never draw such a conclusion. But they can't, because they're psychologically ill. You see? That's the Issev Elos Asur Achorei Levavchem. Achorei Levavchem Zuminus. What Chazal, what the Pasuk is telling us, is that there is a tremendous attraction to certain philosophical conclusions, but the attraction stems from our psychological nature. And as long as a person cannot get out of the grips of that attraction, there is no way that he can come to any proper conclusion. Then he's over al tifnu el ha'olim, That is the Yisod HaRaisa. That's why the Rambam says that a person will not be able to. He's not capable. Very few people are able to really understand the truth. Now Yadus finds itself in a very difficult position. Because on the one hand, Yadus values truth and knowledge. As a matter of fact, Yadus is the only religion which maintains that with Das, through Chochmah, a person can reach total perfection. You see. So on the one hand, Chochmah is the greatest thing that we have. And Chochmas Hashem, that is the only remedy that we have for our own imperfections and for our own, in order to attain success. There is nothing else. Because the Gemara says clearly, Barasi Yetzirah, Barasi Torah Tavlin. We are the only ones that maintain that knowledge is our only salvation. That is the only thing we have. So on the one hand, knowledge and Chochmah throughout the Nevi'im, throughout the Mishle, Kehelas, the Torah, everywhere is Chochmah is the highest thing. And Chochmah is that which is going to lead us to our salvation. So really, Chochmah is the key. But on the other hand, there's a big problem. Problem is, if everybody's going to be allowed to just delve into questions, when they have defects in their own nature, when they're imperfected, they're going to arrive at crazy conclusions based upon their own emotions. There is a tremendous attraction to different philosophical views. That attraction is unconscious and it's psychological. If a person isn't free from those unconscious forces, he is going to arrive at those conclusions because they satisfy his emotions. You see, only very great people can escape such a phenomenon. Only very great people. Now, exact science is not a solution because practically nothing can really be proven directly. Practically nothing. As a matter of fact, the more man investigates science, the more he finds out how weak his tools are for investigation. As a matter of fact, the modern scientists maintain that definite knowledge of the universe is completely impossible for man. It's inherently impossible. Because anything that we do, we interact with nature, and our interaction itself is causing results. We cannot remove ourselves from the universe and study it. It's an inherent impossibility. So therefore, whatever we're studying is an interaction. And the things that we study don't have... See, before science went into the subatomic, so we had our senses. And we assumed that our senses tell us reality. But once science went into the subatomic, it comes out that which you feel and you sense and feel so sure about as a table has nothing whatsoever to do with reality. Nothing whatsoever. It's simply, all you could say is it's a type of sensation which gives you a certain image. But there are no images. There are no physical images that we could use. In the world of Newtonian physics, you were able to satisfy yourself with certain physical perceptions. And scientists were trying for many years to use certain physical models for understanding subatomic particles. But they realized that it's impossible. You can't compare light to a wave, or you can't compare it to a particle, because the idea of particle that we have is a physical idea, and it stems from our senses. The idea of a wave stems from our senses. We use these models in order to be able to work with nature, in order to be able to show that there is an order to nature, that there has to be. If there's no order, there's no science. There is an order, but we are incapable in any way of imagining, using our imagination or our senses, in understanding the ultimate reality. And as science advanced, especially in modern science, this became more clear. So that now a total understanding of nature becomes completely impossible for man. There are many books written on that subject. But we can have what scientists call a probable type of knowledge. A probable type of knowledge. Now, when you come into the area of the probable, you're going into a very dangerous area. If something can be proven, like a Euclidean proposition, fine. You can't argue with it. But when you're coming into the area of probability, probable knowledge, and what does probable knowledge mean? It means the smoothest formulation. The equations that have the smoothest formulation are, on the whole, the ones that are true, or closest to the truth, shall we say, that we can perceive. Now that becomes a very dangerous area. Who's going to decide what's simpler and what makes more sense? So you see that in order to be able, if a scientist performs an experiment, he has to make an experiment based upon factors. Who gives him the factors? There are millions of factors going on. He has to isolate factors which he thinks probably will affect the experiment. Now that decision that he makes on the probability of the factors, that's a decision he has to make based upon his own seichel, his own yashrus, his own mind, which tells him that this is probably the right thing. That decision-making process, you see, that probability is a very tenuous type of a thing. It's not something that can be demonstrated, can be proven, like Euclid's propositions. And the question is, who is really in line with reality to be able to know? You see? And unless something can be demonstrated, even if it's demonstrated, and even if you give a theory, the next demonstration can prove that that theory was wrong. You see? So it comes out, however, so one could say at that point, so nothing, so there's nothing. But that's not true either. Because we do see that somehow or other, man is able to gain more knowledge. Let me just give you a quote from one of the great later scientists and philosophers of science. He quotes Einstein. He says like this: "As Einstein has remarked, in every important advance, the physicist finds that the fundamental laws are simplified more and more as experimental research advances. He is astonished to notice how sublime order emerges from what appeared to be chaos. And this cannot be traced back to the workings of his own mind, but is due to a quality that is inherent in the world of perception." Now, this scientist goes on, he says like this: "This not only shows that our minds are in some way in harmony with the workings of nature, it further shows that the simplicity which is inherent in nature is the kind which our minds adjudge to be simple. Indeed, any other simplicity would escape our notice." You follow what I'm saying? In other words, what turns out to be is as follows: that you cannot have any concrete proof for anything, but you can only say that there is a certain simplicity in the operation of the phenomena that we study in the universe. And there is a sense in man that grasps that simplicity. Of course, that's the yesod of Torah that we had in Bereishis, last week's parsha, that God created man b'tzelem Elokim. What does it mean b'tzelem Elokim? As all the chachamim explain, it means that man has the ability to perceive chachmas Hashem. But it's interesting, that perception is a sense, it's an intuition, it's a type of scientific intuition. That intuition is a very delicate, tenuous kind of a thing. It can be thrown off by any other force that exists inside of the person, so that in order for a person to follow a seichel ha-yashar, he has to make sure there is a seichel ha-yashar. This the Torah guarantees us. There is a telem lekin, there's a seichel ha-yashar. The only thing is that the other part of man can, another part of man, which is his yetzer hara, his emotions, can always cause a person to deviate from the proper path and will not allow the Tzelem Elokim to come into play. That is what the Rambam means by the Yisr. It means any individual. That's why we can't allow. Yadis cannot allow a free-for-all. It's impossible. A free-for-all is total destruction. A person is not on a level to investigate. For instance, there is a childhood wish that a child has a wish that he should be able to do everything. As a matter of fact, there are psychologists that have shown that a child at a certain point resents any type of reality, because reality is something which is an imposition. It locks him in, and it prevents his fantasies from being fulfilled. So you can understand very well how a person who is stuck in that stage, who's fixated, has a certain fixation to that stage, if he's going to investigate science, he's going to hear there's a theory that nothing exists. I love that theory. That would be great for him. It means there's nothing, whatever I want, you see. So basically that's what the Rambam means when the Rambam says that apikursis is avodah zarah. Why is Apikursus Avodah Zarah? It's the same thing. Because Avodah Zarah is nothing more than a return to the infantile. That's what Avodah Zarah is. Apikursus is the same exact thing. There's no difference. There's no difference. Yadus is a revelation of the truth and a revelation of reality, but the only person who can see it is a person who has reached the level of perfection that he can work with his Tzelem Elokim, with that part of man that God gave him, which, as this scientist says, is in harmony with the simplicity of nature. There is a simplicity, there's a chokhmah and a certain intuition through which a person can grasp the harmony of nature. There's a harmony there, and man is the only being that is capable of perceiving it. Otherwise there couldn't be any science, because you couldn't have man studying something that he's not in tune with. So apparently there is a reality, and we have some tool through which we can be in line with that reality, you see, but that tool could be distorted. That's why Yadus had no choice but to Asr. Many people think, why should Torah Asr? It's a limitation. It's not a democratic type of thing that everybody can investigate. No, it has to be that way. There is no other possibility. The way the Torah framed it is very beautifully. It means a person who follows his emotions is a min. He is not permitted to investigate. Only a person who has reached a very high level. Now the Rambam explains there are different areas and different levels. You see, depends on the person. Now I would say that even you find, for instance, there's a Marsha in Horios that mentions the value of mathematics and astronomy. I told you Chazal Mazolos. But if somebody would ask me, would you have a Seder in the yeshiva in mathematics or in astronomy, I would say absolutely no. It's awesome. So this it would be an Issur D'oraisa. Why? I'll tell you why. Because when you enter the studies, for instance, in a college, it's not just, I don't mean the fact that you're in a college per se, I just mean the approach of the secular world. There is a secular approach that is a foundation, so to speak, a basis. It's very subtle, but there is a certain underlying premise, you might say, or approach with which people study the sciences. That approach is Minos, you see. The only approach that a person can make towards any study has to be based on one thing, that study is integrally tied to Chochmas, to revelation of Chochmas Hashem. And any study which does not have that premise, any approach to a study that does not have that premise is simply Kfira, you see. Therefore, that's why Gedolei Yisrael were against any type of Limud Chokh. Why did they asser it? And they said only Ba'akroi. What it means, Ba'akroi, means, see, Akroi doesn't mean literally Ba'akroi. It means like this. It means that if this is incidental to his whole framework of seeing Chochmas Hashem, then on the contrary, then it's Teil B'Pardes, and then it leads him to the highest level. But if it is a study in itself, and that's where Baruch Ber mentions, that if a person will consider that through other studies he's going to attain perfection, that's absolute Kfirah. That's absolute Kfirah. Because the moment you say there are other studies, what you're saying is that this is outside the realm, you see, and I can assume that approach, and every study has an inherent approach. I don't care what science you are studying. But those who partake of that study, there's an inherent basis, a subtle basis, which goes on in everyone's mind, in which they have a certain approach to the field, you see, a certain underlying philosophy, so to speak, of the field. Like biology, if a person studies the biologist, there is a certain Weltanschauung of a biologist. See, that Weltanschauung is Kfirah. And mathematics says, well, even mathematics doesn't remain completely removed from it. You see,
mathematics being
so, No. I would say no. It's absolutely usur. That's why he says it's usur to make it as a kfiyas. Because if you, the moment you're making it as a kfiyas, you're being koveya this limud, what you're saying is you are giving credibility and value to that subject as a qua subject. There is no such thing as a subject of mathematics. No such thing. All there is Chochmas Hashem. There is no such thing as a subject of math. There is, as a matter of fact, the subject of math per se is worthless. Because insofar as it doesn't lead a person to perception of Chochmas HaBorei, just the subject by itself, the Rambam says in one of his writings, people that just study mathematical questions just for the sake of the intellectual interest, he says, is a complete bittelsman, a complete waste of time. You see, the whole idea of segmentation of subjects, that itself smacks of kfira. You see? Yeah, because that itself is saying that you're setting up this thing as a separate entity, and then it has its own value in its own right. That's why that's really the issur of the Ramah. You see? To be koveya. Koveya means you set it up as a separate structure. There's no such thing as a separate structure. You see? That's the nature of the issur. Now, therefore, I say as follows, that there is a great danger. I don't think anyone can play down that there is a danger the moment a person walks into a university if he isn't advanced enough in Chochmas HaTorah. There's a tremendous danger. There's a big awe. These professors, and the whole world, basically. It's awesome. And a person feels that he comes from a yeshiva, he sees that the whole framework for the sciences has nothing to do with his own framework of his life. There is a conflict. There's a tremendous conflict there. He tries to overlook it and to push it away. But that is a great danger. A person can get caught up with the spirit of the university and destroy his whole chayon, lose his whole chayon abah. There's no question about it. It is a tremendous danger. On the other hand, those people who are nichnas lepardes, like a Rambam, his and the Rambam's philosophy emerged. Those who understand the Rambam, the Morne Vuchim, the Rambam's philosophy emerged that even in the light of the most advanced knowledge today, the Rambam's philosophy stands firm. You see, because he was able to understand and to perceive the inner workings of Torah, and to be able to understand a certain epistemology that stems from Torah. The Rambam would converse with Einstein on the concept of certain aspects. I don't want to go into detail. Certain aspects of God, of the universe, of Chochmas Hashem, they would be in very much in agreement. You see, the philosophy of Yadus, if a person can glean that philosophy, he can find the roots, the Yesodei Ha'olam, that are eternal. He can partake of eternity, but he has to be on that level to be able to do it. And that's why there's an isser. That's why the only question is, the big problem is, like the Rambam said, every person has a tremendous ego, and every person feels that he's ready to do it. The question is, how do you create a system? How do you systematically? What kind of objective criteria can you come up with to usher it? That's why the Shulchan Aruch basically says, it's usher unless it's ba'akroi. Difficult to every person is sure that he's not in danger. He has already worked out all his underlying emotions. He knows himself perfectly. There's no problem. He'll emerge. He'll be like Rabbi Akiva. Even though Chachmei Yisrael couldn't do it, he'll be able to do it. But that is a tremendous danger, and that is the issue. But this is basically I think we can have an understanding at least of what the area that we're dealing with is. The secondary issue is the primary issue. Because here you're dealing with Chayel Mabal. The secondary issue is the question of a Ben Torah, how we should spend this time. This, I don't think there's any question that the Tshuva of Moshe is 100% correct, and that is that any person who wants to become a Lamdin, those who know Lamdus, who know what is entailed in becoming a Lamdin, know you can't do it with divided energies. It's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. Can't do it. So that a person must make sure, if he wants to become a Talmud Chacham, that he has to have a period of his life in which he's free, simply, and even if he bottles, it's a crazy argument. People say, well, look, he's wasting time there. He's wasting time anyways, Potter. They let him go to college in that time. It is not true. There a Baruch Be'er steps in. There's a difference between a person, Shev Al-Tasa, and a person, like Rav Moshe says, who is directing his energies to another area, channeling off energy. If you're tired, you're tired, so you rest up. So you apparently can only learn a certain amount of hours a day. So a person will learn 5 hours a day. Doesn't mean he won't become a lumpen. But if he's going to take that energy, which he has for the 5, 6, or 8 hours a day, and he's going to divert it to another study, he definitely will not be able to make it. That's why it's extremely important. I'm always very happy when I see the yeshiva fellows that take off time from college to sit and learn on a full-time basis. And I notice the tremendous gain that they make in learning. You can just see it. Has to be that way. Learning is a full-time involvement. To become a lumpen is not an easy thing. It's not like becoming a doctor. It's a different kind of a thing. A doctor doesn't have to learn how to read a book. He doesn't have to learn how to just get the pshat. The plain pshat alone could take years till a person knows how to learn a piece of Gemara and get the plain pshat. After that, you get into the area of conceptualization. And after you learn what a concept is and what a formulation is and what a svara is supposed to sound like and look like, then you have to be able to pull it out of the Rishonim. The Rishonim write in a certain style. That itself is an art and requires tremendous ingenuity. So till a person becomes a full-fledged lamdan is years of work. There is nothing that similar in our society. It's a different kind of phenomena. And it's impossible to accomplish that with energies that are divided. Can't do it. You see. Yes. I'm glad you mentioned it. There is no question about it. If you want to see a proof for the level of human investigation in our generation, the level of scientific human investigation in our generation, you could just take a look at psychology. The last count, there are over 200 different approaches. So, you know what the Rambam says. When you have a lot of machlokes and nobody knows what they're talking about. So within a certain area, you can tolerate a machlokes. You can have an argument in science as to whether the nature of causality is one way or another way. It's possible. You can't have an argument 200 different ways. So it shows you, obviously, that some people are not being guided by their rational mind. I mean, we don't come up with so many possibilities in the area of the intellect, which again shows you the danger that man is inherently in tremendous danger without a guide, without Yahadus, without a guide. He is in tremendous danger of falling prey to all kinds of crazy philosophies, nonsensical philosophies. A person is a London, he could see through some of these ideas as simply ridiculous. But You have to have the basis of knowledge of Torah. You have to be perfected to a certain degree through Chochmas HaTorah. And that is the only instrument through which we can become perfected. Psychology is a dangerous area today. There's no question about it. I would not advise a person to simply delve into psychology on his own without the backdrop of Chazal. Without the backdrop of Chazal, it's extremely dangerous.
Yes.
There's certain basic fundamental things that a person has to know, like Torah Misinai, like Ramban says, certain things that a person has to be guided by, not just Stam. But to go beyond that point is already a dangerous thing. Like the I think Saad Yagoyan spells it out in the beginning of his work on philosophy. What exactly is from Torah, what we know from Torah, and then there's philosophical speculation, but there's a certain basic idea that we have from the Yesodei HaTorah, from the Balei Masorah, from the Maimed Har Sinai, the demonstration of Maimed Har Sinai. There's a certain basic rational type of system that he has to follow, you understand? But then going out of that basic area is a danger zone. Okay? Okay, we've taken a break from our usual subject matter in order to go into the area of Torah and Mada. And last week I spoke about some basic points. I'd like to maybe just continue and elaborate a little bit more on the subject. I noticed that there have been some, a lot of questions about the area, and I think maybe it wouldn't do any harm if we would just spend some time in further discussing what we discussed last week. One of the things we mentioned last week is that this question of Torah Umada is not just a question of halacha, but it's a question which involves the Yesod Hadas, the fundamental principles of Yadas, and therefore can't be treated in the same manner. Okay, Yesod Hadas are to be distinguished from specific halachic questions. As I told you, for instance, in a halachic question, so certain situations play a role. Situations play a role in determining which halachic alternative one may seek. And under certain circumstances, we have a right to resort to different halachic sources. I mean, if one knows how to paskin a shayla, one is aware of the whole system of what one takes into consideration in paskin a shayla and what one doesn't. And under different circumstances play a role in determining the halachic psak. Of course, you have to, one must be learned and know when and where and how these factors come into play. But in Yesod Hadas, none of these factors play a role. As a concrete example, there's a halacha that you can't make gzeira she'ein rov hatzibur yachol lamod ba. Can't make gzeira that most of the congregation can't make a takana. The chacham cannot make a takana which most of the people cannot abide by. They find it difficult or impossible to abide by, personally, because of certain emotional reasons. Or still in all, the halacha can't halacha cannot be established against the trend of which of what people will accept. And if halacha is established that way, then halacha must be rescinded. With regard to Yesod Hadas, of course, such a thing is absurd, because in Yesod Hadas, it doesn't matter if most of the tzibur can't abide by it. It plays no role whatsoever. No matter how few people we have that are willing to abide by the Yesod Hadas, we have to go with these principles. And numbers play no role whatsoever. So the concept of Rov HaTzibur, Gzeres Yem Rav Tzibur HaLavah, of course cannot apply to any of the fundamental principles of Yadis. Therein perhaps you see the greatest distinction. There's no compromise when it comes to Yesod Hadas. Now, the main idea that I wish to mention in last week's shiur was what I felt was a wrong with regard to the approach to the question of secular knowledge. And that is that many people felt that the many Gedolei Yisrael who were opposed to it were fanatical in their view. I wish to show was that they weren't fanatical at all in their view, but on the contrary, that the view was completely in line with our Masorah. And to maintain such a position really borders on kfira. And we mentioned that even the subtle underpinnings of a subject are considered by Yadas as dangerous. Subtle premises which certain subjects which actually make up the framework in which certain subjects are taught are considered dangerous and border on kfira. Even in the sciences, if, for instance, one should set up mathematics as a separate study, a separate entity, and one would feel that mathematics is something which is to be viewed in its own sphere, that it has its own sphere of reality, such a concept is against Yadas. And if a person would be caught up in that notion, then he would be caught up with basically something that would be considered a dangerous idea for him. Because in Yadus, as I mentioned last week, there's only one subject, and that's the subject of Chachmas Elokim, the wisdom of God, God's knowledge, insofar as man can perceive it, of course. And there are no extraneous subjects, there are no individual subjects, but all subjects, on the contrary, reflect God's Chachma. And the only value in the subject is, Yadus, of course, recognizes Hashemayim Esafim Kvod Keil, and Yadus recognizes that the subject, all knowledge, all subjects show the greatness of God, but of course it requires a person who has the proper background and who has the proper philosophical attitude to uncover these ideas and to demonstrate through the subject matter God's Chachma. And insofar as a person is incapable of doing that, the subject matter really has no value. Like the Rambam mentions, people who spend their time in mathematical subtleties. Rambam was the greatest proponent of mathematical knowledge, but yet he says if a person should spend his time in just mathematical questions, just for the enjoyment of the intellectuality itself, so the Rambam says that is considered a waste of time. Unless he's doing so to improve his mind, which is beneficial, but then it's in a different framework. And many areas lend themselves to conclusions which, if a person doesn't have the basis, proper basis, philosophical basis, then his conclusions could be erroneous. As I one time mentioned, a minister of religion asked a biologist, what exactly do you see if the role of your studies of biology about God? So his answer was that God likes beetles, because beetles are the most prevalent of all the species. I mean, you understand that such a metaphysical background that this individual has would not suffice to demonstrate from the science of biology God's Chachma. It's the person is immature insofar as his concept of God, and therefore he may be a very, very knowledgeable in the area of biology, but his knowledge in the area of biology has no way of taking his knowledge from biology and interpreting it or bringing to light through his knowledge of biology God's Chachma, because he's deficient in the area of philosophy. And that's why the bases of a subject could be construed as dangerous. And Yoni Sachs brought to my attention a well-known Gemara which shows this. The Gemara speaks about Reb Meir, who was a great Talmud Chacham, as everybody knows, a great Tana, and who studied under Acher. Acher was an Apikoros. Acher was a Min. And the Gemara asks a question. The Gemara says, how is this possible? The Gemara says, Rab Meir Hecha, it's Gemara in the Chagigah Daf Tezlov Amabez. The Gemara says, Rab Meir Hecha Goma Torah Mipur Madacha, how could Rab Meir possibly study Torah from Acher? Vama Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Oma Rabbi Yechanan, Mai Dechsiv, Ki Sifsei Kohen Yishmeru Das V'Torah Yivakshu Mipiyu, Ki Malach Hashem Tzvakosu. So the Gemara says, "In Domo Harav, Lamalach Hashem Tzvakos Yivakshu Torah Mipiyu, Vim Lav Al Yivakshu." That if the Rebbe is like a Malach Hashem, so then a person should search and should learn Torah from him, and if not, he's not permitted to learn Torah from him, even Torah, which is the very essence of Yadus and the most important study. Even Torah, if a person would wish to study from an individual who does not have the proper philosophy, the proper Weltanschauung, the proper understanding, basic understanding of the framework of reality, insofar as that Torah fits into the framework of reality, so even Torah itself cannot be studied from such an individual. The Rambam mentions it in Perek Dalad Milchas Tamat Torah Alacha Aleph. It says like this. Rambam says that V'chein Rav. What does it mean, Ki Malach Hashem Tzvakos, that the Rebbe is like a Malach? What does it mean, he's like a Malach Hashem Tzvakos? I mean, what is that supposed to mean? He has an angelic appearance? So the Rambam explains, no, v'cheina rav she'ena holech b'derech tova, a Rebbe that doesn't go in the proper road. Afa pisha chacham gadol hu v'cholam tzrichen lo ein mislamdim mimenu ad shuva lamutav. She'nemar kisif sekon yishmeru das v'tari v'akshem pikim al chashem tzvakosu. Amr chachamim, im rav dom al chashem tzvakos v'akshem tzvakos v'akshem tzvakos im lav al yivakshem tzvakos v'akshem. So you see that if even a Rebbe who doesn't abide by the halachic system and by the philosophical principles of the system, so one is not permitted to study Torah from it. So the Gemara asks a question: How could Rebbe Meir do this? So the Gemara answers: Amar Rav Shlakish Rebbe Meir Kro Ashkach V'Dorash. He said he found a pasuk that he interpreted which permitted him to do so. Why? Because it says, "Hat oznecho shma divrei chachamim." Bend your ear and listen to the words of the wise. V'libcho toshis ledaiti, and your heart you shall place. You shall assert your heart, or direct your heart to my knowledge. Ledaiti means to God's knowledge. So the Gemara says, "Ledai tom lo nemar, ella ledai ti," which means to say that you see that sometimes when you study from Chachamim, that you could study the particular knowledge which they offer you, but nevertheless you should take that knowledge and you should interpret it according to the framework of God's knowledge, and that's the case. The Gemara says that was the case of Rav Meir, who studied from Acher. And Acher was a great genius, but his philosophy was corrupt, his philosophy was wrong, and therefore Rav Meir was able to do that. He was able to study the knowledge, gain the knowledge, and then take the knowledge and divert it and understand it under the true framework. But the Rambam doesn't bring this down as a halacha. The Rambam just brings down the first part of the Gemara as halacha, which is that you're not permitted to study from a Rebbe whose ideas are not correct, whose derech is a derech lo tova. So you see that why didn't the Rama bring down the Reb Meir? The answer is apparently because the case of Reb Meir is not halacha. Halacha is general principles. Reb Meir was a specific individual. And that's why even Torah itself can be a dangerous subject if it is taken out of the framework and the framework of the true philosophical knowledge of God.
Is that a halacha or not?
Excuse me?
Is that a halacha or not?
The answer is like this. The answer is that basically it is halacha. There's no question about it. One is not permitted to do so. However, there are certain instances, certain individuals who are not involved in the danger. For such an individual, there is no issue. But such individuals are extremely rare, and only one who is on such a level is capable of doing that. He said, yes.
Wasn't Acher not Acher until after
the very problem? Acher's problem is a supreme meaning.
That's true. That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. That Acher was not capable of. Acher overestimated himself in that regard. Yes, he was incapable. He should not have been nichnas lapardas, as the Gemara says. Okay. Now I just want to clarify the Rambam that we did last week. The Rambam nichnas lapardas kachavim, where the Rambam says that a person is not allowed to think. He's not allowed to think. Again, he's not permitted to entertain certain ideas. Entertain certain ideas. Now here, of course, you have a problem. When Yadis restricts a person, the area I'm going to discuss is the area of Taramada, which is an area that's very negev as manazeh, more than it ever was, until rather recently in our history. It's an area I just want to start off by mentioning that.
Perhaps I mentioned it last week, but I feel it's extremely important, and that's why, at the risk of being repetitive, I will go over it once more.
The Rambam says that kol machshava shu gorem lo lo avodas kachav no varu shasal hi fanasach rab machshava la kol machshava shu gorem lo lo adam lakor ikr me ikri atara muzhoren anu shalo la halos al libenu v'lo nasiach daitenu lakach v'nachshu v'nimshach achar huri alev m'nei shel daito shel adam kitzora v'lo kol hadeos yichol m'hasig ha'emes al-buryo. So he says, and if a person, in other words, what Rambam says like this, he says, not only avodah zarah, but any idea which causes a person to uproot one of the fundamentals of Torah, we are warned, in the Torah, it is prohibited for us to entertain such a thought or to direct our minds to such a thought and to follow it and to follow the feelings or the imagination or the tendencies of our heart. Why? Because a person's mind is small and not every mind is capable of understanding the truth soundly. And if every person will turn after his own thoughts, so what will result is that the world will be destroyed according to the limitations of his mind. How? For instance, sometimes he will go after or start entertaining thoughts of avodah zarah. Sometimes he will think about the oneness of God. Maybe he is one, maybe he isn't. Then he'll go into questions of what existed before the universe and what will exist after the universe. And sometimes he will question nevuah, prophecy. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Sometimes even Torah itself. Was Torah given by God at Sinai? Was there revelation? Maybe there wasn't. He says, and the person doesn't know the methods of analysis in order that he may be able to arrive at the truth soundly. And therefore, what will result is that he will become an apostate. All right? That's why the Torah says, V'lo sasurach relevavchem v'acharei enechem asher atem zonim. Klomar, what it means is, each one of you should not follow or be drawn after his limited mind, his limited intellect, and he should not imagine that his thoughts understand the truth. Okay? And that's what the Chum said, Achre v'losurcha levavchem zuminus, achre enechem zuznus, v'lav zeh, and this love, even though it causes a person to lose his part in the world to come, there is no malchus because there is no maaser. Okay, because that's a separate thing with Allah phenomena. You can't have malchus without a maaser. But as we mentioned last week, the Rambam is not against philosophical speculation, as is obvious from his works in the guide in the Morne Buchim, where the Rambam shows and demonstrates the basic philosophical premises of Yadus. But what I explained in the Rambam was that the Rambam is speaking about a certain type of investigation. And the type of investigation that the Rambam is discussing is the intuitive, you see. That's why the Rambam mentions not to turn after your hearts. What does it mean? Of course, the proof of Torah Misinai, to understand that Torah was given Misinai, is extremely important. As a matter of fact, the Ramban says it's one of the mitzvahs of the Torah that a person should understand. Now, how could a person possibly study this concept if he's not going to entertain both sides of the question? It's an impossibility. It's a logical impossibility. A person has to entertain both sides of the question in order to study the proof. It's impossible to study the proof otherwise. So what I said was that what the Ramban means over here is not, he is not discussing he's not discussing knowledge of Torah Misinai. Knowledge of Torah Misinai is incumbent upon all of us. But the knowledge must proceed in accordance with the rational, in accordance with a rational principle that exists in each and every one of us and that was given to us by God, which makes us unique, the fact that we have the ability to perceive reality and to follow that part of us which is our mind. But there's another type of thinking that a person does
which is completely usa, which means a person will sit down and will say, let me see, does it make sense that Torah is min ha-shamayim? Does that make sense that there was actually a revelation? I mean, we don't see any miracles occurring recently, so this thing sounds strange to me, therefore I will reject it, which means to say that a person will make decisions based upon his own intuition. That type of thinking is a lav of the Torah. That's where the lav comes in, which means that a person will attempt to establish, it goes even further, of course, it means a person will attempt to establish what is philosophically real based upon what seems to him as sensible. That is the law of Meraisa. For instance, you know that among the Yesodei Hados, among the 13 principles of Yadus, is the belief in Bias HaMashiach. Okay? In Bias HaMashiach. Which means to say that in the future, an individual will arise who will change the entire world, the entire world order, and will lead man to a knowledge and understanding of God, which will be prevalent not only among the Jews, but among the entire world. Now, a person will say, well, look, it doesn't seem probable that such a thing will occur. Say, to me. It doesn't seem probable to me. That would be an Issa D'Oraisa. That would be Lo Sorcha Levavchem Achreinechem. He's going after Kotzer Daito, after his limited knowledge. Similarly, the belief in Tchias HaNesim. I mean, it's one of the Yesodei Hados that there will be a time when the dead will be resurrected. Now, if a person will simply think to himself, "Well, is this a probable type of thing?" You see, that is a law of Midaraisa. Why? Because our concept of probability, our intuition, what we call our intuition, is not a very sturdy method of arriving at the truth, because that which is intuitive to us is nothing more than that which we are used to. We have a tendency to accept as probable that which we are used to, so that if a person lives during a certain time when there are no miracles, some miracles will seem to him as something which is absurd and impossible. Whereas if a person would live during a time when God saw fit to perform miracles, to him it will not seem absurd. So that it would come out that a man existing during certain centuries, because of the time that he exists, certain things to him will seem probable that will not seem probable to another individual. Now, we are not permitted to decide what reality is based on probability. As a matter of fact, I would repeat what I one time mentioned about the concept of the difference between three different views. One view which is perhaps even a religious view, which is erroneous, but which again is based upon a person's feelings. The view that a person feels intuitively that God is very much directly involved with him, and that he senses somehow or other that he is at the center of the universe and the center of God's thoughts, which David HaMelech says is false, because David HaMelech says, on the contrary, Mo Enosh Kisiskereno. That's only a very small person thinks that way. But a person that studies knowledge of the universe gets the opposite feeling, that man's affairs are very small in terms of the whole of knowledge. And therefore, he often concludes, as many scientists conclude. I mean, Einstein was perhaps the greatest scientist, and Einstein had a deep and abiding belief in the Creator. But nevertheless, it seemed to him absurd that God should be involved in human affairs. Because of his great knowledge, it seemed that human affairs are too small for God to be involved with. And this same sentiment is expressed by David HaMelech when he says, Mo Enosh Kisiskereno. When I look at the heavens and I study your works, so I feel, what is man that God should be involved with his affairs?
That's a legitimate feeling. It's a legitimate intuition. Nevertheless, it's not true. Because the Masorah teaches us that God is involved in human affairs. However, we cannot, because the fact that God is involved in human affairs must remain to us an abstract truth, not one with which is in line with our feelings, because the feelings in favor of that mostly are certain egocentric feelings, which again do not tell us reality, which again are nothing more than our own emotions. And we cannot allow our emotions to be that which determines what reality is. That's what Yahadis demands of us, basically. And we cannot allow our emotions to be the determinants of what we conclude to be reality. There's only one area from which we can gain knowledge into reality, and that is from the Tzelem Elokim, that part of man which is divine and which can perceive Chachmas Hashem. Now that area itself is itself a very subtle type of thing. What area comes from Tzelem Elokim? What area doesn't? The Rambam mentions it, speaks about it in the Mora. The Rambam is in the guide. It's in the first part of the guide, where he talks about it's under the Kalim. The Kalim are a group of philosophers that the Rambam discusses their philosophy. Now the Rambam says like this. The Rambam it's under the 10th proposition. It's in on page 129 in the paperback edition of the Rambam. He says like this. He says, hear what profit we derive from the preliminary disciplines, and how excellent the propositions are which we learn through them. So the Ram mentioned before, he says, nor can imagination in any way obtain a purely immaterial image of an object, however abstract the form of the image may be. Imagination yields therefore no test for the reality of a thing. And the Rambam gives an example, which today, of course, it's not as easy to see what he means by the example. I think if you could just reflect back a little bit and remove some of the things that you used to, I think it's an excellent example. The Rambam says like this. He says, know that there are certain things which would appear impossible if tested by man's imagination, being as inconceivable as the coexistence of two opposite properties in one object. All right, which means to say that an object is hot and cold at the same time, for instance. He says, yet the existence of those same things, which cannot be represented by imagination, is nevertheless established by proof and attested by their reality. Okay? What he's saying is that even though something would seem to us to be impossible through the faculty of our imagination, yet reality tells us to be that it is true. And he gives an example. He says, imagine a large globe of any magnitude you like, even as large as the all-encompassing sphere. Further, that all-encompassing sphere is a part of the ancient astronomy. Further, an axis passing through the center and two persons standing on the two extremities of the axis in such a manner that their feet are in the same straight line with the axis, which may be either in the plane of the horizon or not. In the first case, both persons would fall. In the second case, one, namely the one who stands on the lower extremity, would fall. The other would remain standing, as far as our imagination can perceive. In other words, we have a globe, and you have two people standing this way. So one would imagine they would both fall. If the globe is circular and one is on top and one is on the bottom, so you'd imagine the bottom one would fall, but the top one wouldn't. Okay? It has, however, already been proved that the Earth has the form of a globe, that it is inhabited on both extremities of a certain diameter, that both the inhabitants have their heads towards the heaven and their legs towards each other, and yet neither can possibly fall, nor can it be imagined. For it is incorrect to say that the one extremity is above, the other below.
But the term above and below applied to both of them as regards their relative position to each other. Okay? So the Rambam, of course, is giving a simple example, but the example is a very good one. If you would imagine, of course, now every schoolboy knows that the earth is a globe and there's no problem. But if a person was didn't have that knowledge, did not have that knowledge, he would be convinced just existing. If his knowledge was limited, he just existed in one part of the globe, he would have a sense that things fall down to the fall down towards Earth. He would not be able to imagine a globe in which people don't fall off the other side. See, today it's difficult to imagine otherwise. Of course, anything, as I said before, anything that you're trained from youth to accept as reality, you don't have any problem with the imagination. However, you can see very clearly that if you didn't have that knowledge, this would be the most natural thing for a person to assume to be correct. So that, as I mentioned before, the imagination, what we sense as likely and probable, is nothing more than a product of what we have been exposed to. You see, and that gives us a certain sense of reality. That sense of reality is what the Rambam always calls the imagination, and which the average person uses to determine what reality is, and which the Torah informs us that we are not permitted to use that sense, because that sense does not determine reality. Again, the Rambam goes on and speaks about mathematics. He says, similarly, it has been proved in the second chapter of the book on conic sections that two lines, which at first are at a certain distance from each other, may approach each other in the same proportion as they are produced further, and yet would never meet, even if they are produced to infinity, although they are observed to be constantly converging. This is a fact which cannot easily be conceived, and which does not come within the scope of imagination. Okay? So there, the Rambam mentions that certain mathematical, certain things which are proven mathematically as being correct, yet the imagination somehow or other can't possibly accept them. All right? Okay, now he says like this. It has thus been clearly shown that in man exists a certain faculty which is entirely distinct from imagination, and by which the necessary, the possible, and the impossible can be distinguished from each other. This inquiry is most useful. It is of the greatest profit to him who desires to guard himself against the errors of men guided by imagination. Okay. Now he says like this. He says, consider, O reader, and bear in mind that this requires deep research. For there are certain notions which some believe to be founded on reason, while others regard them as mere fictions. In such cases, it would be necessary to find something that could show the difference between conceptions of the intellect and mere imaginary fancies. When the philosopher, in his way of expressing himself, contends reality is my evidence, by its guidance I examine whether a thing is necessary, possible, or impossible, the religionist replies, this is exactly the difference between us. That which actually exists has, according to my view, been produced by the will of the Creator, not by necessity. Okay, that's a separate point. But it's like this. Getting back to the idea that he mentioned about imagination, it's like this. About this admissibility of imaginable things, I shall have more to say, and I shall return to it in various parts of this treatise. For it is not a subject which should be rejected in haste and on the spur of the moment. And the Rambam does return to it in many, many places. I'd just like to point out a few. I think it's important because I think that this has very much to do with some of the most basic principles of Yahadus. The Rambam says like this. This is in chapter 15 in the third section of the Rambam. He says, again, he says, while philosophers say that it is impossible to produce a square with a diagonal equal to one of the sides, or a solid angle that includes four right angles, or similar things, It is thought possible by some persons who are ignorant of mathematics and who only know the words of these propositions but have no idea of that which is expressed by them. Of course, the Rambam is speaking of the mathematics of his time. Now, I wonder, he says, whether this gate of research is open so that all may freely enter, and whilst one imagines a thing and considers it possible, another is at liberty to assert that such a thing is impossible by its very nature. Or whether the gate is closed and guarded by certain rules, so that we are able to decide with certainty whether a thing is physically impossible. Interesting, very interesting part of the Mara. In other words, the Rambam here really is anticipating some of the basic problems that confronted modern physics, especially in the change from the Newtonian system to the Einsteinian system of physics. Very extremely interesting. So like this. I should also like to know, in the latter case, whether imagination or reason has to examine and test objects as to their being possible or not. Likewise, how things imagined and things conceived intellectually are to be distinguished from each other. How do you distinguish between something that's conceived by the imagination or something that's conceived by the intellect? Okay, in modern physics, in terms of modern physics, the question of light as a particle or light as a wave is one of those things precisely that the physicists were involved in. And the early approach was really an attempt to understand these phenomena in terms of some type of time and space reality that a person is used to. And therefore, many problems resulted. And this was precisely the problem that faced the physicists of our generation, basically, within the last 100 years, I'd say, last century, from the time of the turn of the century. He says like this. The Rambam is interesting. The Rambam anticipated some of these problems. But, of course, in his time, he simply didn't have the physics. As the Rambam mentions, certain things. Like he said, that some people criticize Chazal on their astronomy. He says you have to know that the astronomy that Chazal discuss wasn't given to them at Sinai, but basically they were discussing the ideas of astronomy that they had learned in their time. And the science wasn't as developed then as it was in the time of the Rambam, just like it wasn't as developed in the time of the Rambam as it is today. Now, the Rambam says as follows. He says, for it occurs that we consider a thing as physically possible, and then someone objects, or we ourselves fear that our opinion is only the result of imagination and not that of reason. In such a case, it would be desirable to ascertain whether there exists some faculty to distinguish between imagination and intellect, and if so, whether this faculty is different from both, okay, or whether it is part of the intellect itself to distinguish between intellectual and imaginary objects. All this requires investigation, but it does not belong to the theme of this chapter. He says, okay, we have thus shown, you see, the Rambam already anticipated the question, the most basic question in modern physics, whether man can construe. The question is, what in our understanding of nature and reality, what part of it is really merely stems from imagination, which means from the fact that we wish to understand and interpret things the way we are used to, and what part stems from the intellect alone. Of course, the view of modern physics is that the only part of man that is legitimately associated with reality it boils down basically to the mathematical descriptions. Only mathematical description is possible of reality, but nothing else. Any other description is pure imagination. The Rambam already noticed the problem. You see, a lot of people misunderstand the Rambam. They consider the Rambam to be an Aristotelian.
But the Rambam was really not, and they consider him to be an apologete. He was not, the Mora is not an apologetic work at all. On the contrary, in the very next chapter, the Rambam speaks about the philosophers, and he doesn't show any deference to them whatsoever. He says, with regard to the basic ideas of God, the Rambam mentions in chapter 16, the philosophers have uttered very perverse ideas as regards God's omniscience of everything, God's omniscience of everything beside himself. They have stumbled in such a manner that they cannot rise again, nor can those who adopt their views. I will further on tell you the doubts that led them to these perverse utterances on this question. And I will tell you the opinion which is taught by our religion and which differs from the evil and wrong principles of the philosophers as regards God's omniscience. Okay? The Rambam realized, you see, and this is what I'm trying to say basically, that we, in receiving Torah from Sinai, are the guardians of a very specific type of philosophy and a very specific type of metaphysic. And we cannot be swayed by the attitudes of the philosophers at any given point in history, for the simple reason that our philosophy is based on underlying realities which are the ultimate knowledge that man is capable of in relationship to metaphysics. And you have to realize that the world, going through different stages of knowledge, even the greatest minds, even an Aristotle, even a Newton, even an Einstein, will have to go through many different stages. And to stop at any stage and to say that this seems to me to be correct based upon our knowledge and our sense is completely erroneous, because to do so would be to be guided by the imagination. As I mentioned before, imagination is something which appears to us to be correct based upon what we observe. A famous example is given of a chicken that universalizes, and whenever he sees the farmer, he always assumes that he's going to be fed, until the final day when the farmer approaches him in order to take him to the market. So you see, but to that chicken in his framework, every time he sees the farmer, he associates it, and it seems rational, so to speak, that this is what the type of experience he is about to observe. But due to his limitation, he is bound one day to make a serious error. Man finds himself in the same type of situation if he uses his imagination. Nevertheless, it should be made clear that Torah does not maintain that man should abandon his intellect. Far from it. Man should not abandon his intellect. The only thing is that man must be very cautious with his intellect and realize that he can only be very cautious in using his intellect, and realize that he can only use it in the area which is legitimatized, you see. And that's where the Masorah comes into play. See, that's where the Masorah comes into play. As I mentioned before, when I said that the Rambam is not an apologist, even with regard to astronomy, the Rambam criticizes Aristotle. And the Rambam mentions that which Aristotle says about the heavens, very interesting statement that happens to be the Rambam mentions. The Rambam says that where Aristotle mentions concepts about astronomy, so the Rambam says that most of his ideas in that area are completely based upon nothing more than imagination. Okay? Just a second. I want to read it because I think it's important. Yeah. The Rambam is in the second book. It's in chapter 22. The Rambam's like this.
How is Abraham able to get
this is one. I'll answer your question. Just let me first finish that. So, yes. The Rambam says in chapter 22 of the second book, Rambam says like this. Rambam says, but what Aristotle says, the Rambam says that what Aristotle says concerning things which he was able to observe, namely the physical world, he says those things are rational. But what Aristotle says concerning things above the sphere of the moon, meaning in the heavens, is, with few exceptions, mere imagination and opinion. That's what the Rambam says. Okay? To a still greater extent, this applies to a system of intelligences and to some of his metaphysical views. They include great improbabilities, promote ideas which all nations consider as evidently corrupt, and cause views to spread which cannot be proved. What the Rambam means by corrupt is means it goes against the basic principles of Yadus. That's what the Rambam means. So, the Rambam accepted Aristotle was merely trying to apply Aristotelian philosophy to Yadus is completely erroneous, if you examine his works carefully. Completely erroneous. The Rambam stood very steadfast with only one thing. The basic principles of Yadus, those ideas which he was able to glean from the system of Torah, and he was very careful and very cautious to guard those ideas against any type of views which were based upon what man thinks or considers to be probable in reality, you see. Because that is the way the Rambam describes love. Okay. Chapter 24, the Rambam continues the same manner. He says, but of the things in the heavens, man knows nothing except a few mathematical calculations, and you see how far these go. Okay? And meaning to say that they don't go very far in ascertaining reality. I say in the words of the poet, the heavens are the Lord's, but the earth he has given to the sons of man. That is to say, God alone has a perfect and true knowledge of the heavens, their nature, their essence, their form, their motions, and their causes. But he gave man power to know the things which are under the heavens. Here is man's world. Here is his home, into which he has been placed, and of which he is himself a portion. This is in reality the truth. For the facts which we require in proving the existence of heavenly beings are withheld from us. The heavens are too far from us, and too exalted in place and rank. Man's faculties are too deficient to comprehend even the general proof the heavens contain for the existence of him who set them in motion. It is in fact ignorance, or a kind of madness, to weary our minds with finding out things which are beyond our reach, without having the means of approaching them. We must content ourselves with that which is within our reach, and that which cannot be approached by logical inference, let us leave to him who has been endowed with the great and divine influence expressed in the words, mouth to mouth do I speak with him, meaning to say that Moshe Rabbeinu had such a knowledge. This is all I can say on this question. Another person may perhaps be able to establish by proof what appears doubtful to me. It is on account of my great love of truth that I have shown my embarrassment in these matters, and I have not heard, nor do I know, that any of these theories have been established by proof. Okay. So the Rambam sensed, it's an interesting thing, but the Rambam sensed from his metaphysical position, which he derived from Yadus, he sensed a tremendous lack somehow or other. You see the way he formulates it, that there's an inherent lack in man in being able to understand really the basic realia, the basic realities which underlie the world that appears to us. You see, now it's very interesting, but I have a very similar quote. As a matter of fact, it's basically the essence of this book, which was written by Sir James Jeans on physics and philosophy, in which he expresses and explains how the same basic idea that modern science basically showed man that his most basic way of understanding things are completely impossible, and that understanding the world through the senses becomes a totally impossible undertaking. Yeah. Now, let me just... I just can't find exactly what it says. It mentions it in many places, but here's one place. It says, we have seen that efforts to discover the true nature of reality are necessarily doomed to failure. So that if we are to progress further, it must be by taking some other objective and utilizing some new philosophical principles of which we have not so far made use of. What he's showing is that in the light of modern physics, there is no way that we can conceive of what the ultimate realities are in nature. As a matter of fact, whatever we use, whenever we study, we're only studying our knowledge of, like for instance, if we use wave mechanics, we're only studying wave mechanics and not underlying realities. They're only something within us which parallels nature, so that we're studying our own knowledge of nature rather than nature itself. The underlying realities of nature are forever hidden from us simply because our senses aren't capable of perceiving them. And what we perceive through our senses are only accidents or offshoots of basic physical phenomena. So that he says that certain knowledge is beyond our reach, and certain knowledge of reality is basically beyond our reach. And that's basically the conclusion of modern physics, because once you remove all type of sense perception, so you have nothing with which to go by to determine what reality is based upon the view of reality that your senses have presented to you. The only thing your senses can do is they can be aware of certain phenomena that strike them. But even that study of how phenomena are involved with your senses, it even gets more complicated, because the point is, whenever you make an experiment in certain subatomic particles, certain subatomic phenomena, what happens is the experiment itself affects the phenomena, so that what you're studying, you cannot remove yourself as an observer from the whole of nature. And it comes out that as an observer, your observation itself is linked with that which you are studying itself. But at any rate, without going into the... yes?
The point you made...
You're right.
The argument
exactly.
that you raised with right. regard to...
But the point is that the concept of our intuition is always limited. That's why I mentioned before that for a person to reason in the sense that is it probable to me that there will be a Trias HaMason is precisely the type of reasoning which would be prohibited, because that reasoning is dependent upon what is probable in relationship to God's actions. Now, a human being cannot arrive at such a conclusion based upon what he experiences during his short lifespan. The only way to arrive at such a conclusion would be if he would have a total knowledge of everything, including God, which is, from his particular standpoint in history, impossible. So that what he considers probable in regard to Trias HaMason or the principles of our religion would be based erroneously on his limited exposure. Now, in science, as each generation progresses and the scientists are exposed to a different scientific milieu, a different environment, their ideas are in line with that environment, because man can adapt that part of his mind to his specific age, to the time that he lives in. But it's not a tool that is permitted to be used with regard to absolute knowledge insofar as God is concerned, or insofar as the basic principle of Yadis are concerned. Perhaps man will at one point arrive at an intuition which will... That's what the Rambam says, he doesn't know if there is such a thing. Rambam believes there's an open question in the Mora. Will man ever arrive? Will there ever be a time for man where he will be so developed intuitively that his intuition will be in line with
all the principles of Yigimli Karim. I mean, will there be such a time? The Rambam leaves it as an open question. He doesn't know, you see. But certainly, meanwhile, during the progressive states of humanity, it is prohibited for us to make any judgments. A physicist, it is permitted for a physicist to make judgments based upon how he views reality, because he's involved in a certain time in history, and that's the only way progress can take place. But insofar as the absolutes of our faith, we can't do such a thing. And as a matter of fact, the insofar as I'm concerned, the greatest part of the Mora Nevucha, which shows you the Rambam's great depth, was that he was able to remove himself from his environment and from the scientific ideas of his time when it came to the Yesodi Adas, and he made this clear-cut distinction that science develops over many years and in successive generations, and things which seem absurd at one time become, on the contrary, something which is acceptable at another time, so that the intuition, the scientific intuition, grows as man progresses. That's true. But we cannot, we are not permitted to use intuition, you see, to determine the basics which have to do with God's knowledge, which is an ultimate type of knowledge. We are not permitted to use that type of intuition in determining what the principles of Yadis are, or whether they're correct or whether they're not, because they inherently have to be limited to their time and their place. Yes?
Good question.
The Yesodei Ados are not just open. The Balei HaMasorah, when God gave the Torah, the system of Torah, the system of the Masorah, it's a very intricate system which was very well kept. As anyone who knows halacha, who studies halacha, knows and sees the in-depth of the science of halacha, which is an abstract science in the highest form. And I'd like to just mention that as I mentioned many times before, that the Rav has mentioned oftentimes, and it's something which it sounds like a boasting, but it isn't for those who have studied the area. But the abstract ideas that are found in, for instance, in concepts in halacha and halachic concepts are of the highest nature, even more advanced in abstract thought than scientific knowledge. The Rav has mentioned this many times. The abstractness in Rav Chaim is way above, as the Rav said, head and shoulders over the most abstract thought in Immanuel Kant. And this is not a question of attempting to say that Torah is superior, but those who have knowledge of Torah know what it means. It's difficult to convey if you didn't study the areas. But the Rambam, for instance, mentions that in Hilchas Tumah V'Tahara, Taharis is the most abstract area of halacha. We don't study too much Taharis today, maybe for that reason. But Taharis is the most abstract area of halacha. And the Rambam mentions that even Nevi'im, when it came to certain areas in Taharis, were unable to perceive accurately what the abstract formulation was precisely. The Rambam mentions this. So halacha is of such an abstract nature, you see, that even Nevi'im, even prophets, were unable to conceive, to understand the ultimate abstract formulations. It becomes the area of halacha on the higher plane, on the higher sphere, is an extremely abstract study. But the reason why metaphysics is considered higher than halacha. Halacha is considered davar katan, as you know the Rambam says. But it is not because of a lack of its abstract nature. It's because it's a different kind of an area. You see. Now, with regard to the Yesodei Ados, this is extremely, with regard to the Yesodei Ados, what I want to say is as follows, that there is no question. The Torah was was given over to the Balei HaMasorah, and because of the fact, as I mentioned last week, there was avtocha given to us by God that the Torah will always continue, and that's why the science of halacha still exists to this very day. The Yesodei Ados was certainly very carefully kept. And the Rambam, when he mentions 13 Ikarim, and there's a machlokas with a 13, whether it's 3, it's not a question of a particular area, whether a particular area, you see, is true or not. For instance, if I boil them down to 3 Ikarim, it's not a question of whether Trias HaMesim is true or not. It's not a question of whether Moshe's Nevuah is superseded by no other Nevuah, you see. No, that's not a question. Question is simply how you formulate the Yesod HaDas. And I think I one time gave a shiur in the machlokas between the Rambam's formulation and between the Alba. Different formulations. But the basic principles of Yadas, Achdus Hashem, the oneness of God, the fact that God is indescribable, the fact that God has no physical qualities, I mean, these are not only is it built into the psukim, Eki Asher Eki, anyone that studies the psukim and the Chumash themselves, a little bit of understanding sees that these ideas are the main ideas of Yadas. As I mentioned last week, the idea that the heavens only reflect one thing, God's Chachma and nothing else, was known to us from Maamar Har Sinai at a time when everybody else was looking at the heavens, was projecting their own emotions onto the heavens. But the Torah told us in Devarim that the heavens only reflect one thing, God's Chachma. The attitude, the scientific attitude towards the whole of the universe was one that was given to us at Sinai. And it's part of the Yesod HaDas. This specific science was not developed. It was given over to man, developed in succeeding generations. But the fact that the heavens represent the source of God's knowledge and that the only approach to them is through man's Seichel, this was given to us at Sinai. The Baalei HaMasora. If you study the Baalei HaMasora, if you study Sadi Goyen, if you study, for instance, I mean, not just the Mora, but if you study not the Maamar Tchiasa Meisim, I'm talking about the basic after Sadi Goyen. Not the Kuzari, of course, but the Sefer the Rambam's. Chavos Alvavas, for instance, the Chavos Alvavas, all the Baalei HaMasora, and in Chazal, it's found in Chazal, the basic principles of Yadus that are found in Chazal are not argued by any of the Baalei HaMasora. You see, the basic principle of Schar V'Onesh is found throughout the Talmud by the greatest Chachamim. I don't think there is no one that denies Schar V'Onesh. The whole Torah is butl mevutl if you deny Schar V'Onesh. That was Acher's concept. That's why Acher was considered outside the realm of the Baalei HaMasora. He had erroneous ideas. No one denies Schar V'Onesh of any of the Baalei HaMasora. So the main philosophical principles were guarded by our nation, and it very simply had to be that way. Without that, there is no system or any Masora. If certain basic points are at question, if there's a question of whether God is physical or not, I mean, a question like that is of course impossible to be tolerated among the Baalei HaMasora, and there is no such question. That's why whenever the Gemara talks about God in a physical, so to speak, manner, it says kaviyachol, as if it was possible to say that. Ilmolei mikra kosevi efshilomrof. The pasuk didn't say that God vayavar Hashem alpana vayikra. I wouldn't be able to say such a thing. It's only that the pasuk says it to convey certain ideas. The Rambam points this out in the beginning of his Mora, and he shows you Unkelus, for instance, and all the Baalei HaMasora. The basic principles of Yadus were well guarded by the Baalei HaMasora, just like the very halachic system was guarded by the Baalei HaMasora, and that's why we have it to this day. There is no question about those ideas. There are details that are questioned, certain side points. What exactly is meant by Schar V'Onesh and what Schar V'Onesh entails, I'm not going to tell you, is a simple phenomenon, a simple thing. It is a difficult thing. It is a complex thing, because again, you're dealing with the workings of God. But that Schar V'Onesh does exist, that is not questioned by anyone. How exactly, precisely it works, even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand, because that's why he required he asked God, "Hodieni noas durochecha, show me your ways." Vayavar Hashem b'alpanav Hashem Hashem kel rachon v'chanon erech apan v'chesed v'emes. The Yud Gimel Midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was an understanding that Moshe Rabbeinu received of how God relates to this world, to humanity, in what manner, and that Moshe Rabbeinu himself couldn't conceive of before he received the nevuah. So obviously, Schar V'Onesh is a very complex institution because it's part of God's Chachma. If we don't understand the physical universe that God created, certainly we don't understand things that stem from His very nature insofar as how He relates to man. But Moshe Rabbeinu received an understanding of this through a nevuah, which we don't have. But the fact that it exists is certainly the very basic
most basic premise of Yad Vashem certainly is one of the Ikarim. As a matter of fact, I think Albo has it. That's one of the Ikarim, one of the three, if I'm not mistaken, Skyrunners. So what I'm trying to point out is that it is not simply a free-for-all when it comes to that area. The questions, once you get into the topics themselves, a deep understanding of the topic, certainly there are arguments on that point, because Yadus maintains that every individual, insofar as he is capable, and if he's on a proper level to investigate, is obligated to investigate and obligated to follow what his mind tells him. And that's why you have machlokas among Gedolei Yisrael. But with regard to the most basic principles, there is no question. In halacha, it's the same thing. That's why the Rambam, for instance, says there is never a machlokas whether shchitas habehema is from the neck or whether shchitas habehema is from the belly. See, there's no machlokas about that. There are machlokas in the details of the halacha, certainly. And there has to be such a thing, because it's a theoretical subject matter. And theoretics demands that each person investigate to the best of his ability with his mind and follow what his mind tells him. We're obligated to do that. But the basics of the system, there are no questions about the basics of the system. That we have in the Masorah Misinai. And similarly with the Ikarim as well. You see. And this concept that the Rambam mentions, for instance, that a person should not follow his intuition with regard to establishing or understanding the basics of Yadus, but rather he must rely, as Sadi Goyen says, on the Masorah, and after the Masorah, his knowledge and his understanding, that is a correct principle. It's a pasuk v'lasorach acharei levavchem. It's a chazal. It's not open to question. You see, I think the Ravin has an article similar to this on certain basic premises that are, you know, you have to be able to distinguish between that which is a basic principle of Yadus and that which is open to debate. There are two different types of areas, you see. But the basics of Yadus, the basic principle, none of the Baalei Masorah argue on the basic principle of Schar V'Onesh, of Achdus Hashem. Yet there anybody argue on Achdus Hashem? There's no such... it's an impossibility. It's a pasuk in the Torah. You can't... The whole Torah points to that concept. Yes?
Going back
like this. That insofar as, and this I think Sadi Goyen mentioned, that insofar as a person uncovers a certain point of knowledge, and he finds that this point of knowledge is expressed in the Torah, but he has to know how to read the Torah. You see, you can't just have a person just taking the Torah and just using it to apply a certain idea. I mean,
assuming
the person is a legitimate scholar and he knows the method of approaching the Torah, and through his method of approaching the Torah he sees a certain concept, and then he sees through the study of reality, through the study of nature, he sees that this concept is supported. Certainly the assumption should be that this concept is correct. I mean, that he understands it. Yes, certainly. There shouldn't be any question about that. Right. Yeah, well, that of course, it is always possible for a person to be making an error. It's always possible there is nothing that can be definite. But we have to follow the method which is most probable to us in terms of knowledge. I mean,
exactly
all knowledge that man has is only knowledge of probability in terms of what is yes, but that certainly is considered that. As a matter of fact, the Rambam in the Mora makes that point. He says the only philosophy that we should abide by is when a person investigates reality as an impartial thinker, and he arrives at a conclusion which, through the investigation of Torah, the same conclusion is brought about. But he has to be an impartial investigator and know how to investigate Torah, first of all, know how to investigate science in both areas. When there is a correspondence, certainly there is a person should assume that knowledge, insofar as human knowledge is concerned, is correct and must abide by that knowledge. Yes, absolutely. That is not considered a mere intuition. According to the Rambam, the way a person commits that lav would be of lo sorach levafma v'reinechem, would be where a person sets himself up. You see, the Rambam makes it clear. I haven't read all of the Rambam here to you, but the Rambam makes it clear from his words that what he is saying is where a person sets himself up as the center of knowledge. In other words, he will determine what reality is, what the principles, true philosophical principles are, based upon the way things appear to him and fit into his Weltanschauung, into his general sense of reality. See, there's a general sense of reality. For instance, if you will go to a primitive savage and you will show him a radio, he'll be astonished. He'll start attaching all kinds of fantasies to this phenomena. What's going on here? What is this? This magic coming out of a box. All these crazy ideas, which we consider to be crazy notions. See? Why? Because he has a certain Weltanschauung. He has a certain sense of reality. Now, a modern-day thinker, as you mentioned before, has a different sense of reality. And the most modern physicists have a different sense of reality than the previous generation, than the physicists from the Newtonian generation. So that sense keeps changing. Now, if a person will rely on that sense at any given time, and he will say, I am going to decide the principles of Yad is based upon that sense, that would be the love of the Lo Sasuru Acharei Levavcha. In other words, without showing a deference to the basic principles which we have received from Sinai, and simply by saying, I am in line with reality. The way things appear to me as sensible, that's what I am going to accept. And if it doesn't appear sensible to me, I will reject it. You see? So in other words, in his given level, he's going to determine philosophical principles. That, according to the Rambam, is v'losur acharei levavchem. That's why it says levavchem. Levavchem means the heart. The heart implies a certain attitude, certain emotional type of attitude, you see. And that would be the love, according to the Rambam. A physicist naturally uses his intuition. I mean, they say that Albert Einstein, when he had a question, he would say, let me think, if I was God, how would I work this out? That was his approach. Which means to say that obviously he had a tremendously high level of intuition when it came to the world of physics. And that's the correct approach, the only approach that an investigator could use, because there are millions of phenomena that he's bombarded with. And to isolate the phenomena requires a certain intuition, a certain sense that this is where it is. You see, just like in halacha, when a person has a question, the Rav one time mentioned that when Rav Chaim heard a question, he immediately knew where to go, because his sense of intuition in halacha was so great that he could tell right away where the answer is going to come from. Just like a great scientist can tell through his intuition where in the answer lies, which phenomena to check, to observe, what to look for. You see, that's an intuition, scientific intuition. That's fine when it comes to scientific knowledge. But to use that sense with regard, in relationship to God, in relationship to how God works, or how he runs this world, or principles in relationship to the knowledge of God, that is the love. That would be the love. That would be overstepping his bounds. You see, and it's rational to see why it would, because his intuition is brought about by his exposure to the knowledge of his times. But this knowledge is inherently limited and certainly can't go beyond the physical universe, because that's what he's studying, the physical universe. Now, in metaphysics, you're going beyond. You're talking about God, which is beyond. He has no area. He has never been exposed to such a type of a thing, you see. I one time gave an example that the concept of God's existence and is not being physical is a concept which is not something which sits comfortably with a person, for a simple reason that he has never, his concept of existence is always inherently tied to something which is physical. If, for instance, if there was no such thing as inanimate life, inanimate objects, if everything was animate, so everything that we ever saw in our lives would be moving, would partake of motion, but it would have life, okay? We don't know what life is exactly, but whatever it is, if something strikes us based on certain criteria, we're going to call certain things living, certain things animate, certain things inanimate, okay? Now, if everything that we were exposed to was animate, we would have a hard time imagining something which is physical and yet inanimate, because we simply were not exposed to it. Now, in our realm of perception, we only perceive things which are of a physical nature to have existence. So when we speak of existence without physical, we're immediately caught in something which is unfamiliar to us and which sounds to us as mind-boggling, you see. But Yadus demands that we make that we accept that as being correct based upon Nivoah. But if it would be based upon a person's natural intuition, say no. Yes. A person is obligated to know the 13 principles. It's interesting. I one time heard someone say that why does the Rambam say that if you deny one of the 13 Ikarim, you see that he's a kofar. But if you deny even one word of the Torah, you're also a kofar. Yeah, but the answer was given that I don't have to know every word in the Torah, but I must know all the Gimel Ikarim. That is true. You must know the Ikarim. But another answer is that the only reason that I know that a denial of one word of Torah is because one of the Ikarim. How is one of the Ikarim? If it wasn't one of the Ikarim, I would know. But the truth is that you must know. There is a chiyuv in everyone to know the Ikarim. A person should study the Ikarim. There's no question about it. I think it's very wrong that in our generation we find that people don't study the Ikarim. Even in yeshivas, the time is not taken out to study the Ikarim. It's extremely important. Perhaps they feel that they don't really understand them philosophically in a very in-depth way, so they avoid them. But the point is, on every level, it's important that a person should know what the basic Ikarim are. I mean, hopefully as he gains knowledge, he can understand them deeper. There's a tremendous amount of depth in the Ikarim. There's no question about it. The Torah isn't deficient in any area. There's just like there's depth in the Taisvus, there's depth in the Ikarim. Even to a greater degree, the Rambam explains. But unfortunately today, this is not done on a very wide scale. Yes? It's a good point. Even if he should assume Torah and Shemayim, even if he says, yes, Torah and Shemayim. But if it's based upon that, then he's over the lot. Yes? I mean, there's no question about it. It is a process of searching which the greatest person is involved in. That's why the Rambam in the Mora himself mentions that he had certain unresolved questions. But the only thing is, there is a difference between a scholar who knows the area that is unresolved and knows how to approach the area and which area he is weak in. That's extremely important to know where the person is belongs, what he should approach and what he shouldn't, and where the questions lie. That's a difficult thing. But that process of searching, I mean, the Pasuk says, Hashem and Hashemayim Hibit, God looks down from the heavens to see if there is a person that's Doresh Elokim, that is searching for God. So you see that that is the highest level, the search. But the searching for God doesn't just mean a person is questioning, is there a God, is not a God. It means that he's involved in a certain process, but he's involved in a certain framework. The framework is the framework that's given at Sinai. But that framework, within that framework, there's a tremendous amount of searching and understanding and knowledge which man is always in the process of gaining. Even the greatest scholar, even the Rambam himself, recognized his own deficiencies when it came to those areas. Every person is deficient. No one in Yadis, no one arrives at a final level. Except perhaps in certain areas, like the Rambam mentions with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu. He seems to indicate that Moshe Rabbeinu did arrive at certain definite knowledge. Mm-hmm. But anyone short of Moshe Rabbeinu, as I says, leave that for Moshe Rabbeinu. That's not for us. Yes? One time mentioned where the Rambam says if a goy should say that he accepts the seven mitzvahs of Noach, the Noachite code, but he accepts them because of Hechra Hadas, the Rambam says. It seems, what is Hechra Hadas? It means it seems probable to him that those things make sense. There's seven laws that make sense, and he accepts them. The Rambam says this person is not a chacham. Why? Because his acceptance of them is simply based on his own intuition. That's not considered an acceptance. That means what he likes is he accepts what he dislikes. If it's based upon the fact that he recognizes that it is part of a system of Yadus of Torah Misinai, then it's a valid acceptance. Otherwise, it's not valid. Yes. The Rambam seems to say where it becomes highly conjectural that their man should assume that one of the critiques of Aristotle was that Aristotle in areas where he knew it were, he didn't have sound knowledge, nevertheless was more certain than he should have been. The Rambam considers Aristotle the great Chacham, don't get me wrong. But he still felt that in certain areas he was more sure than he should have been based upon the knowledge that he had available to him. I just want to conclude with one point. Yes, I'm sorry. Sure, absolutely. What Avraham arrived at, the conclusion Avraham arrived at, was the God of Israel. That conclusion he arrived at on his own. That there is a God that is non-material, non-physical, an abstract God that's behind all the chachma in the universe, and that man should abide by what God, what he sees, insofar as following God, insofar as emulating God, but not by the projection of his own emotions. That was the basic thing against the Avodah Zarah. Because Avodah Zarah is simply regression into infantile emotionalism. And Avraham feels against it. That's basically, that's right. But other ideas of God, higher knowledge was only received by Avraham Avinu through Nevoah. Through Nevoah. Without Nevoah, Avraham Avinu wouldn't receive certain knowledge of God. Would not receive it.
And he might not have even gotten the
power of God. The only time, that's right. The certainly with regard to mitzvos, he wouldn't have understood certain things without revelation, without Nevoah. Man can only reach a certain point without Nevoah. He needs Nevoah. Nevoah is a necessity for man, because the information that he needs can only be received through Nevoah. If he doesn't have that information, then he's in trouble. So therefore, that's why you have to have a system of Masorah and Yadus. Yes.
What you're saying is awesome.
I just read a book recently. The name of the book is God and the New Physics. So the person, I'm not qualified to pass judgment about his knowledge of physics, but I would say one thing: his knowledge of God was so infantile that it was like a book that was. Completely, it was written on two subjects, and one subject, the man had no basic. His basic notions were crazy. So, the thing to remember is that science is a legitimate area of investigation. On the contrary, it is this is the first to recognize that all the Chachmas Hashem is reflected in God's creation. And it's incumbent upon us to understand it and to see God's greatness through the creation. It's incumbent. It's a legitimate area of investigation. It's a mitzvah. But insofar as a person making the mistake of assuming, not differentiating between one area and another, that is a serious error. One, I just want to close with one more point. The point I want to make was like this. I spoke about the abstractness of Talmud. And what I want to conclude with is something I hinted to last week, that in the very approach of Talmud, which has its own method of reasoning, its own system, it's a science within its own orbit, so to speak, has its own approach. But even within that approach, even though it deals basically with halacha is not physics, halacha is a different area. But in the process of dealing with the halachic phenomena, there's a certain type of reasoning that's used. A certain type of reasoning that's used. Those who study halacha, of course, know what it is. I mean, you have to become familiar with it. You have to learn it, just like any other area. But what I want to say is that even within that science, that study, there lies a certain method. And this method has got to be, must play an important role in a general Weltanschauung. Philosophical Weltanschauung, because it deals with a certain type of epistemology. You see, epistemology is a study of knowledge itself. Now, since Talmud was given to us by God, so the type of thinking and the process and the approach reflects God's thought. Therefore, what I wish to say is that it would seem that, insofar as the ultimate uncovering of knowledge, of human knowledge, in the future, that Talmud itself will play a role, insofar as its methodology and insofar as it shows us something about how man should perceive God's thoughts, you see. And its abstract nature. Its abstract nature itself is an epistemological phenomena, you see. And that's why I wanted to mention that the Rav has this concept in his halachic mind. In the end of the book, he mentions this. He says, to this end, there is only a single source from which a Jewish philosophical Weltanschauung could emerge, the objective order, the halacha. In passing onward from the halacha and other objective constructs to a limitless subjective flux, we might possibly penetrate the basic structure of our religious consciousness. We might also evolve cognitive tendencies and aspects of our world interpretation, and gradually grasp the mysteries of the religious halachic act. Problems of freedom, causality, God-man relationship, creation, and nihility would be illuminated by halachic principles. A new light could be shed on our apprehension of reality. The halachic compass would also guide us through the lanes of medieval philosophy and reveal structural standards by which to judge and evaluate the philosophical thought of that golden age. It would help us discriminate between the living and the dead in Jewish philosophy. What, for instance, is of halachic nature in the Guide and the Kuzari, and what merely an echo of Platonic Aristotelian philosophy? The purpose of such an analysis is not to eliminate non-Jewish elements. Far from it, for the blend of Greek and Jewish thought has oftentimes been truly magnificent. However, by tracing the Jewish trends and comparing them to the non-Jewish, we shall enrich our outlook and knowledge. Modern Jewish philosophy must be nurtured on the historical religious consciousness that has been projected onto a fixed objective screen. And his last sentence is, out of the sources of halacha, a new world view awaits formulation. You see. So basically, this concept is definitely one which is tied in to the ideas of the Yesod Hadas. Namely, that in halacha was revealed to us not just a specific study, but also an epistemology. And that's why it's important that a person become a Talmud Chacham and understand to the utmost of his ability the abstract halachic formulations, so that he should be able to use those as a guideline in understanding not just halacha, but all of reality.
You're right. The only point I wanted to add is that the danger of lo surcha levavchem is greatest, of course, when a person starts investigating an area because he senses a certain emotional attachment to that area. In other words, many times you find a person will look into a specific philosophical area, is attracted to that area. The reason he's attracted to that area is usually not because that is the next area in the line of progress of his development. It's usually because he has some emotions in that area. Definitely a person should not investigate in that area if that is the case, because that means that that would be lo surcha levavchem. He's going there because his emotions are attracted to the area. It's not because it's the next level of investigation that's in line with his natural progress, you see. That's why the Rama mentions in the Mora, like he didn't want, even with his Talmud, he didn't want to tell him things in advance. He wanted them to develop naturally, you see. So the areas of study should not be in accordance to how the things bother us, disturb us. That's not a barometer. The conscious is a barometer to veer away from it, you see. It should be in accordance with the natural progress of knowledge.
Different people attract things allergic to it.
The Rambam that we did last week, the Rambam Hilchos Avodas Kochavim, where the Rambam says that a person is not allowed to think. He's not allowed to think. Again, he's not permitted to entertain certain ideas. Now here, of course, you have a problem. What restricts a person